missed you so much.
This is a good day.
Dear Asami, where'd you come from, little cutie?
Dear Cora, I'll destroy you.
Your fiancé?
What do you mean?
This can't be happening.
Well done. She seems very threatening.
Look how cute! Does this mean I'm the master now?
Actually, we're doing fine.
How?
And then she dies.
Think someone is pulling your chain, Gumdrop.
Are you kidding me?
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
We're talking minimum 4 hours.
We'll always have Kale.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar of the Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DongBufang.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Britt.
Hello.
Delaney.
Hello.
Jeff.
Hello.
And Sam.
Hey.
Today we'll be discussing whatever this episode is called, Enemy at the Gates, episode 5 of Book 4 of Legend of Korra. It's a really bad title, so episode 5, book 4, a lot of interesting things happen, a lot to discuss. We're gonna get right into it. And it went up today on, I had a clever thing to say, it went up today on Halloween. This is the special Halloween episode of Korra, because Kavir is so scary in this episode.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyway,
she acted like Darth Vader. She only just needed a costume.
I guess before we get into initial thoughts, I haven't really talked about this much on the podcast. I'd like to express my dissatisfaction at the way Nick is releasing these episodes. There's like a 5-hour period, I would say, when almost everyone in the country is not going to be awake to watch the episodes, and Nick releases them in that period. Like, the episodes go up on Amazon 3 a.m. Eastern and go up on Nick.com, it looks like 6:30 a.m. Eastern automated right now. These are terrible times. Why are you doing this? I think the reason is they're putting them up in the morning on Nick.com is because they want the episode to have exposure all day on Friday. But that kind of mitigates the point of releasing the episodes on a weekly basis. Like, if you're not going to make it a release event, then why not just put them all up at once? Like, you're putting it up so it gains exposure, but the point of releasing it one at a time is so that it's like an event each time, but it's not an event because everyone's sleeping.
Has it been 6:30? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, Jeff?
Do they have full control over when it goes up on third-party sites like Amazon?
The website team does not. I know that. I did ask Nick's representative on Twitter, and they said they have no idea what's going on with that.
So it's possible that they're doing it on Nick.com as reaction to being up early on Amazon.
Yeah, they definitely did that last season, because I tweeted at them, and I said, it's up on Amazon, let's get it up on the website, and they said, yeah, we'll do that. So they did manually do it, but now they're automating it, so they're like just doing it because they have to, I guess. I guess that makes sense, but either way, criticism of Nick as a whole, not necessarily just their website team. Why are we putting them up at 3 a.m. on Amazon anyway? These are bad ideas. It makes it like I'll watch Korra when I get up, as opposed to I'm anticipating Korra at a certain time.
Is it cheapest to put them up then?
I don't think it really
I just think they care.
Yeah.
I don't care either.
And has it really been 6:30 every? There was one morning I actually got up and I was like, I can watch Korra now. It wasn't up. It was like
Nick,
8.
Nick doesn't post them. So if you check DongBufang Tumblr, dongbufang.tumblr.com, if I'm awake, I will post the link to it on Tumblr when it appears. It might not appear on the website, but me and Jeff discovered a thing that shows their feeds before maybe the website sees them, so we'll get that to you when we can. So we might have it up earlier than Coronation posted, is what I'm saying. I'm not sure. Either way, it would be on Amazon at any time, although you would have to buy it, of course. So let's get into this episode, Enemy at the Gates. Let's start with initial thoughts. Did you like it? Did you not like it? And then give me what your favorite thing from the episode, or if you have no favorite things, which I'm sure you don't, you give me something you really didn't like. Let's start with Britt.
I really liked this episode. It was pretty. It was actually funny. Like, I thought it was funnier than I thought it was going to be. Kuvira definitely showed her true colors, and that was fun to see. And then watching Bolin just completely flounder was the best. And my favorite scene was probably the scene when he and Varric grab each other's collars and say at the same time, Kuvira is crazy. Like, wow, guys.
Like, wow, guys.
Yeah.
You're just now getting this. But I do. I really like Bolin's arc this season.
Interesting. Yeah, finally, definitely.
Finally having some emotional, like, development, and, you know, he's having, like, an actual problem Bolin would have, which is being so blindsided by trying to help people and his ideology and what he wanted to do that he just completely was oblivious to all the bad stuff that was happening. Yeah, those are my initial thoughts.
Thank you, Britt. Delaney, what do you think?
I also really enjoyed this episode. It was just really solid. I liked all of it. Favorite parts, I guess it's tied between Kuvira, because I love Kuvira, and she's great in this episode. She's just wonderful.
I don't think Kuvira counts as a part, but...
She's
like a general entity.
It's everything with Kuvira and Julie is definitely the MVP of this episode, and I really... I guess my favorite part... when Julie throws herself in front of Kuvira and is, you know, pledges her allegiance, I really liked that part, which we'll get into later.
Obviously. So, yeah. Jeff, what do you think?
I liked all the plot that happened in this episode. It was felt like a very plot-heavy episode with a bit of action sprinkled in, which is really good, too. So I like how we sort of have a hint in where the season will go next, because prior to this episode, we had no idea. Like, we know there's a conflict with Zafu, and there's something on our Chain Republic City, but that's it. And so now, okay, so there's a super weapon that's based on the Spirit of Vines, so Kuvira is probably going to be going to Republic City to capture it for the Vines. And then I really enjoyed the mech fight scene. And while I was watching it, it was like, oh, this is like Attack on Titan. But if I say that on a podcast without Ali to back me up, everyone's going to go, oh, Jeff, his Attack on Titan obsession.
I watch it. It reminded me. It was vaguely there. I was also thinking the other movie just came out 2 summers ago.
Pacific Rim.
Yes, there you go.
Well, Will Ruzicka, I don't know if this is what you're about to say. Yeah, he reblogged the gift set of that fight, and he said, this is my little homage to Attack on Titan.
So it's legit.
So it was legit. He did that on purpose, yeah.
Huh.
Anything else?
No, that's about it.
Cool.
Oh, and Asami real quick. Asami and...
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Hiroshi's line, I cried.
I cried. That is very very descriptive, because that happens all the time for...
Shut up,
for Cora.
No, I'm not Allie. I don't cry at everything.
Good point.
No, when Hiroshi says, you're the greatest thing I ever created, I was like, oh, my God. It was a terrible line, but I loved it.
Wow, am I not a fan of that line, but okay. Sam is having internet difficulties. We'll get her initial thoughts when she gets back on. I'm a fan of this episode. I was not initially, I would say. The biggest problem I have with this is the de-grayifying of Kuvira, I would say. Yeah. Kuvira is just more overtly a villain here, and I somewhat dislike how quickly that happens. Just makes her much less interesting, I think. I also don't think this episode comes together that well. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on, and the Asami plot is just completely random. And
I disagree.
You can think of potential connections, but in terms of this episode as, like, one cohesive unit, it certainly does not really. And,
that we got something different, though, for her, like, to have something to do.
I'm happy that we got an Asami plot. Like, I certainly didn't anticipate that. But that being said, I still really enjoyed it. I really liked Varric and Julie, and all of their interactions in the episode. Julie is certainly the MVP of the episode. Great scenes at the end, great scene with Varric in the beginning. I'm really interested in the Spirit Vine stuff. I like that we nailed it on the podcast and what it was going to be for. Props to Jeff for that. And I guess it's kind of not exciting in that we knew almost everything. We speculated on this episode and almost everything that happened on it because just from the trailer, right? I'm happy we're getting past the trailer now, because it was pretty transparent on what scenes lined up with what we're going to do when. And you still kind of know what's going to happen because we're going to go back to Republic City and the train stuff. But for now, I think we're past the majority of the things we already know that's going to happen, which is good.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's get into specifics. Enemy at the Gates, written by Josh Hamilton, directed by Ian Graham, storyboarded by a lot of people: Chris, Will, Steve, Dean Kelly, Matt Humphreys, Carly, Squitteri, Jason Zurich. that's like double the storyboard as the last
which
episode.
Which makes sense with the content of the episode. It was all over the place.
I don't know. Yes. I don't know how they decide that, but it's interesting. Anyway, quick shout out to Mel for outlining the episode. Thank you very much, Mel. And we'll see as Mel throws in her little opinions here and there. And then we have general thoughts from Mel to read as well.
Mel's thinks,
the segment, yes. Okay, Act 1. We start with the scene we got early, the clip. Of course, now it seems like we're getting a minute and a half from the very beginning of each episode. And that happens every Friday night at midnight, automated. See it first at the Tom Bufang Tumblr. Anyway, they're going to Zhao Fu, Kuvira, and Batar with their entire army. Mel says, "Doe's cufflinks, though."
Yes.
Kuvira and Batar Jr. He's Batar. Like, we don't need to call him Batar Jr. I don't understand. So Zhao Fu stopped being my home long ago, says Batar. And this is interesting on two levels.
He sounds like an arrogant child.
I hate him.
Like, he sounds like my little sister when she has a big head and I need to tell him to calm his tits.
So here's the two angles I find this interesting. One, Batar just rejecting his home that quickly, right?
Yeah.
Which is an interesting dynamic. We don't get that much of it in the backstory here, but the backstory is more focused on Kuvira and not necessarily Batar, but I don't know. I find it realistic, I guess, because of how committed he is to Kuvira.
And I mean, he's rejecting his entire family too. His mom built his parents literally built the city. He's rejecting everything.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also interesting on the level that Kuvira refers to Zafu's Batar's home and not her own.
Yeah, which is, and then she even said, she gave her big speech in Republic City and talked about Zhao Fu being her home and how much Sue influenced her. And she's like, "Nope, it's your home, bro."
Yeah, it's certainly intentional. It's not like they forgot this when writing it. She referred to it before, and then we have the backstory later in the episode. So,
I do have a question on the map.
On the map, yes.
Yeah, which part of it is Zhao Fu? There's a big swath of dark green stuff up at the top left, and then there's a little tiny spot in the middle.
Yeah, I would assume.
So is that Republic City in the top?
I would think it's up.
If you go far north enough, it's Republic City. I assume the thing in the middle is Zhao Fu, but I'm not necessarily clear on
where the other one seemed a bit too big. I thought Zhao Fu was just five domes.
It is just five domes. Anyway,
why is she so obsessed?
It doesn't seem like a lot of people.
She's Kuvira. She has an obsessive compulsive personality, probably, or at least an obsessive personality.
It's also very symbolic, you know.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of fan made maps and stuff of the Earth Kingdom geography. I tend to ignore those in favor of visual stuff. Kuvira, I like how we start off with Kuvira's character, and I think her character is really interesting at times, and this is one of them. She very much wants a diplomatic solution. She does not want to use force, even though Batar suggests as such. And she says she wants to use Bolin to talk to Sue.
I don't know why she thinks that would...
Bolin can do anything?
Yes, I just... my original theory was that she was going to attack the domes, and then she was going to use Bolin to melt the metal. Like, she knew he was a lava bender.
Literally,
that
use
made
Bolin.
Sense.
Yeah.
Okay, and then she was going to use Batar because he knew how to. The city was essentially built. He was, worked under the head architect for all those years.
Yeah, that's true.
If not,
I assume that I think that'll come into play next week. Actually, yeah, Batar knowing exactly what's up with the city.
I think it lends to Kuvira's character and Bolin's character that Kuvira trusts Bolin this much and how she's manipulating him, because obviously she knows Bolin's going to jump at the chance, and how it shows how much Bolin's grown that Kuvira, a person like Kuvira, trusts him.
At
least at the beginning.
The interesting nonviolent aspect of Kuvira's preference here, it obviously begs the question, is she doing this for image purposes, or does she genuinely not want to use violence to take the city?
There's a good chance it's a mixture of both.
Yeah. She likes the image, but she's not, and it bothers her. I think she has some...
A little hard to justify thinking that she's completely nonviolent on her own, because she very quickly reverts her position, and she also... shows a willingness to manipulating care about her image and other aspects, so.
Yeah, she'll use what force she deems most appropriate, and if she thinks nonviolent force is most appropriate, she'll use that.
That being said,
in
this scene, she's just in front of Batar, the one person she could be open with, and she does say, no, we don't want to use violence here. So the question is, she's even keeping up an image with him, which is possible too.
I think it's very possible.
I think considering they're the only two in the scene, this is like a device, the writing device they're using to indicate that this is her true feelings on this, which is maybe negated later. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe
it's interesting, they haven't really shown the closeness of Kuvir and Batar, so that's
haven't hands or like really made out, and
they haven't made out.
So the only way you would buy them is if they just made out, like
in private, not in public.
They're both just so uptight, formal people. It's just hard to.
What'd you say, Jeff? Or what were you trying to say?
I was just saying that I don't think that she's truly open with him either, just like Bolin.
That's kind of sad if she can't be really open with anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sam is back. Maybe,
good.
Maybe not. Okay, Sam, what were your
What
were your initial thoughts on the episode, and what did you like in it?
My initial thoughts. It was good. I like the Asami parts of the episode a lot. I like those little moments with Asami. Mm-hmm. That was nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was a good episode. It was a good lead-in episode to what is going to happen in Zhaofu. I like it. Yeah.
What did you think of the CGI fight?
It sucked.
Hopefully you'll still be on call when we get to that part. So yeah, okay. Let's continue with this. No, so second scene, Air Kids and Korra are headed back to Zhaofu. Jinora has a line.
Julie talks more than Jinora.
Much more. Iki does not have a line this episode. If Korra says, if Kuvira is headed to Zhaofu, so am I. The Avatar is back. Whatever. The world needs to know. She needs to know the Avatar is back. Okay. And Milo is being dumb, and
Milo is adorable. I'm so glad they gave this like ridiculous like humor to somebody who could handle it. Like Milo's 9, so it's cute. So I'm happy.
Well, a lot of what Milo says, I mean, it gets repeated through the episode by different people.
Yeah,
it's so adorable. It makes sense. Yeah, it's adorable.
Could like, we have? Milo didn't bother me this could episode. We have a character that's more important talking? I don't know.
Like
well,
who?
Just like you wouldn't see Jinora wouldn't like be like, go Jinora. Beat him up. That's why it made sense that Milo said it.
Yeah, I guess. Korra says that Kuvira can be reasoned with. Yeah, interesting. She doesn't want to fight him. We'll discuss Korra's character here later. Probably my favorite scene of the episode, Varric and Julie with the spirit vines.
So great.
Varric it's Spirit Experiment 3-02, I think. That isn't how Mel transcribed it. There's a stasis capsule. The spirit vine weighs 2 Julies. The machine converts spirit energy into usable form. That's not necessarily what's stated. So let me read the exact quote. Again, Mel.
It's
Mel
pure outline. Energy. That's just like...
the quote-unquote transfer... it transfers energy from the vine into a battery using electrical currents, reverse magnetic polarity, and a little-known phenomenon I call the Varry effect. Jeff and
about
Britt.
How funny this is that he named after himself.
Well, yes, that.
The old-timey science.
I'm more interested.
Yeah. And the fact that it's
like,
a V,
a lot
like,
in the Pascal.
I'm more interested in how possible what they're doing is.
And like the whole idea with the volt, like in his name's Varric.
Yes, he is. He's making up his own units of measurement. Britt, do you have any insight on how accurate this is?
Not at all. Like,
well, the line itself
he just electrocuted a plant. What is
spirit?
What chemical could he possibly be using? Unless the spirit's like radioactive, then he could do that. But they're also all going to get cancer, so that really sucks. Sorry, Kavira, you're going to die.
Yeah, that's how the season ends. Yep.
Like I'm being serious though. Like if it could be radioactive, it could be leaking off.
No, it's.
Well, I feel like that the glow like kind of lends itself to the idea that it could like it's represented.
It basically is. It's just not science. It's just.
Jeff, thoughts on. Two things. One, the plausibility of this. Two, this being what the vine is being used for.
I like it. It looks like they're not going to go on the angle of, oh, this is bad for the spirit environment. It's just going to be, you know, destructive, period.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because, like, based on how it behaved, it looks like it's using some sort of Batu energy based on like the noise it made when it exploded, which is really cool.
Right. So
and it was purple.
Yes.
It makes it seem like that's the actual like that's the energy of the spirit world and like Batu and like it would seem like anything relating to the spirit world would do that, which is what I thought was interesting about it.
So the it uses 5 variks of power or whatever. Like he keeps incrementing numbers. Julie, shut it down. There are too many variks. And then we hear the noise it makes when it shoots a beam at the end of the train. And it sounds like Vatu's beam from Book 2. Okay, a lot of angles here.
Spirit minds drop. Like
also, he named 1 means of measurement after Julie.
So yes, the weight measurement. Yeah. Okay. Just thoughts. One, I don't necessarily know if this rules out it draining energy from the spirit world. Like this was part of Jeff's theory about what this would be used for. And I think this was the most interesting potential angle here. And like I think the fact that it made the Vatu beam maybe signals that this is coming from the spirit world in one way or another. Like I think that's what it was supposed to that's like the analogous with a spirit sound. And it could just be that the energy is literally coming from the vine.
Maybe it's just dark matter.
Yeah, it's obviously dark matter.
Dark matter.
I don't know. They will not say the word matter on this show. I guarantee that.
I think, like, it seems to me like it's because Vatu, it's so associated with Vatu. It's like he's the one that created the vines in the first place. Ergo, it has his power. Ergo, it's not coming from anywhere else.
It would make sense in the show to go that angle.
Well, it's interesting that it might be just that, you know, we saw this with Vatu. Vatu is this great, powerful being. And if it's just reduced to that's just how the spirit world is, like that's just the energy of the spirit world, and he's just able to focus it, that would, you know, kind of, I don't know, I think that's interesting.
So,
that,
yeah,
it's
okay.
Anything that everything does.
Two connected angles here. Exactly what you said, Lenny, for number one. It just could just be that Vatu's harnessing spirit energy when he shoots his beam. The second angle, and again, it could come out of the first one, is that the energy is not coming, it's not just in general spirit energy, it's literally what Unavatu put into the vines when he rose them up, right, in the Book 2 finale. As a side note, it's not very good, in my opinion, to have this continuing plot thread from the Book 2 finale, like, in terms of the spirit vines mattering again here, when that didn't make much sense in the first place. Like, I don't know, all of the Book 2 finale to me is just almost completely nonsensical, and I don't think about it very much. And now we're, like, forced to bring up the logic of it again in a major plot point. I'm not a big fan of that.
I mean, he brought up the Tree of Time /
That's another one.
The vines at the beginning of the first episode of the season, but the Spirit Wilds and how Republic City is adjusting and the fancy trains.
Yeah. The Tree of Time, I guess, is better. I'm not sure why, though, because that also didn't make any sense. I guess because that's in the Spirit World.
I'm a fan of it both. Honestly.
We'll see where they go. I think this would be a wasted opportunity not to show this as a technology versus the spirit world type plot. And yeah. I still think they'll go that route. I really do.
I hope so. I'm just glad we got to hear Vatu's noise. I was like, whoa.
Vatu, it's like, where's the laugh?
Yeah. I was kind of waiting for it.
Anyway, the lab explodes. Varric saves Julie. And
ship it.
Yep.
Mel says, literally Tony and Pepper.
They are. It's literally Iron Man. It's ridiculous.
I mean, I assume that's what it's based on, right?
It has to be.
So here's something I want to clarify. This is insight I only gains on multiple viewings. To me, the key line here is the Jarek says the goal of this is to transfer energy from the vine into a battery. So it ends up that this can be used. This is something I don't think the episode necessarily was super clear on conveying. But the intent of this project, to me, for Varric, is not making a super weapon. That's only what it turns into after this accident. Initially, Varric is just trying to put energy into a battery from the vine. However, it goes wrong, and literally in the scene, and that's the first time Varric's aware of this, we discover that it can be used as some sort of weapon.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys agree or disagree?
Yeah. Sounds like the atomic weapons of World War II. I agree.
Yeah,
well, they were like, maybe we shouldn't use these, and then the president was like, yes,
pretty much.
But yeah, well, I guess that is kind of what's going on. Yeah, when Varric says he wants to stop the experiments, Kuvir and Batar want to continue. Varric says that he has a voice telling him what's right and telling him what's right from wrong in his head, and then Julie says, that's your conscience, sir. So I wonder if they're going for a little bit of is that Julie's voice? Is Julie his conscience? That type of thing. Because she's like literally the one that answered him.
Yeah.
Very good, yes.
She's literally the voice in his head. Yes. Like a Blink-182 song.
Like, oh good, that's a good reference. And Kuvira says, well, I'm the other voice in your head, and I'm telling you, you will continue this project.
This is like...
She's getting a god complex. Like...
And then she holds him over the thing, and then... what does she say? Something else about a voice.
No, my internal voice is telling me to dump you on the track.
Yeah.
Track. Listen to it? Yeah.
Yeah, and then Varric's like, don't listen to your voices. This scene was
really mean.
The internal voices are lying. They don't mean anything.
This was very clever, I think, this scene.
Yeah.
It was mean.
It was mean. Oh, yeah. So, Sam's back. So this certainly is the first time you say, oh, well, Kuvira is not a good person. Like, okay, so here's my bias coming in this episode. I don't think anything we've seen Kuvira done did... anything, I don't think anything we've seen Kuvira do on screen at this point is like necessarily morally wrong. That's the thing. Like,
except now she
abandoned
Varric. Yeah.
Literally, like anything, like abandoning the town, like whatever, like it's more of a moral absence. Like it's defendable to a certain extent. That's you've heard rumors of her, and I think a lot of people's instinct is to say, oh, the work camps must have been true before this. And last podcast I said, no, I don't believe those rumors. Like everything they've shown on screen from Kuvira has been, to me, kind of sympathetic. Like I've viewed her not as like a kind of sympathetic character, but now she instantly destroys that in the scene with Varric and just holding him over the tracks, because she always gets what she wants.
She becomes Darth Vader.
The big question to me is,
Hitler, and then
the big question to me is this a realistic Vader. Is this realistic character movement? Like,
I would say so, because basically she's gained power, so now she doesn't have to pretend.
I mean, like, she really said to me.
That's the thing.
This is just our portrayal of her. Remember, like she's always been this way.
Right.
Yeah, we've
never seen.
She was presented very like, I would just agree. Like, I agree with Dylan. Like, everything was really gray, and like she's pretty. Like, Kuvira's not doing anything really bad.
Like not like to me. Not only was it gray, but she was kind of trending good, right?
Yeah, I mean, and, like and you're kind of like she wants something good for the Earth Kingdom. Like, she doesn't have bad goals.
That's the thing. Like, so responding to Jeff, like what we see on it's possible
with good intentions.
Yeah, it's possible what we see on screen with Kuvira is. Now is how she's always been. That's not relevant to me. Like, what we see on screen is her portrayal in the show, right? So, I think this is, it's so, like, I could see this being an extension of her, especially because she's obviously trying to be portrayed as the villain to a certain extent. She's, like, very obviously in that role in the plot. But I think it's too sudden the way she suddenly does something very, very wrong. That being said, I think that's kind of the point. Like, I think this episode is intending to paint Kuvira in a negative light, and it's kind of shocking here.
Like, well, we have all the rumors confirmed, and like, this is the episode where it's like, this is Kuvira, which I'm not entirely pleased with, but this is the episode where they're like, we're going to establish once and for all, this is Kuvira, and we're beginning the divide.
I'm a little... I don't love the portrayal. Like, so I think this episode tries to keep up her like morally gray character, despite her doing bad things, by also showing her doing like still not wanting violence or doing other, like just not wanting to attack or reasoning with Korra.
It's just another ploy for her to get more power, right?
God! So we'll get into where this new line ranks on the worst lines of all time soon, but. Actually next scene, but like I just think I don't love the portrayal as gray of bad thing, good thing, bad thing, good thing. It's like I feel like it's an inconsistent portrayal within this episode.
Maybe she's inconsistently moral. Maybe she like lost her temper and got really amoral.
It's really interesting because she doesn't actually like seem to lose her temper in the show. Like, this is the scene where she most loses her temper. Like,
and
even then,
she's
very composed.
And she's just pretending.
Yeah, no, you could argue that, I think.
I mean, in all honesty, she's being in this episode, that's how she's being presented. Like, because when they say Kuvira's crazy, like, her actions don't make a lot of sense based on what we've scene, and then like she's like you're saying inconsistent in the episode.
I don't think she's supposed to be portrayed illogically.
I don't think so either, which is like the weird part.
But
like,
in terms of her emotions, they don't make a lot of sense. Maybe you could argue that.
I don't really think she has emotions, Dylan.
Yeah, that's another thing. She doesn't. She's very like level.
Yeah, I don't know if it's bad writing or if this is intentional. I'm not sure. I think it's intentional.
I feel like it's intentional, and we're still not getting like the whole picture. You know what I mean?
It can still be intentional and bad. Like, I still think our portrayal is not great here. So, but anyway, so first we have the first of what, three Asami scenes? Three, four?
There's one thing I forgot to bring up. I just noticed it in the previous scene. There's like five frames where you can see the spirit vine in the machine is now missing. Like, it's gone.
Good.
poof.
Ah, so it dissipates. Well,
so cool. Clearly it is
that's
dark
like
matter.
That's like matter-to-energy nuclear reaction.
That's, yeah.
But that'd be a lot bigger of an explosion, though, for that much matter to become energy. Like, there would have been had, like, a huge explosion.
Well, the fact that it was focused in a beam.
Yeah, doesn't it not make sense for, like, that to just dissipate into that? Like, that's a big vine, right?
Yeah, it, I mean,
it weighs 2 joules. It weighs 2.
Well, and it doesn't make sense that it was in a focused beam either. Like, an energy, you have to focus that energy. Like, it just did
can
it
you
itself.
Imagine, can you imagine what would happen if it focused beam the other direction?
We would no longer have everyone here is gone.
Minor point. Why are they doing this on the last car of the train?
Because explosions.
So it wouldn't explode into the rest of the train. That being said, they're very susceptible to like being
doing
like, stopped at the end.
Trains are bad anyway. Like, it's a terrible idea.
Like that's the most vulnerable point of the train. In sort of like they break a hole in it, people could just jump in now or whatever. I don't know.
Then steal all the spirit plants.
Steal
and
all the vines. Yeah, they're valuable.
Train and Quivira and
it'll get into the wrong hands.
Anyway, Asami's first scene. She goes to meet with Hiroshi. I think this would have been more shocking if we hadn't known Hiroshi was coming back. So boo on you, Daniel Dakin, for tweeting that, but she returns his letters unopened. She tells him to leave her alone, and Hiroshi apologizes and says, "You are the greatest thing I ever created.
I hate myself because I liked it anyway."
Mel says literally a line from Iron Man 2, come on.
Yes.
I don't even remember
it. It was adorable,
Iron Man 2,
okay?
But...
Like, it's
he
something
looks...
he would...
Like Miyazaki, literally.
He does look like a Miyazaki.
He looks like he's lost so much weight, and he just looks so old, and his hair is all gray. And
okay, thoughts on the line, "You are the greatest thing I ever created."
I agree.
It sounds like something a cheesy dad would say, okay? Like,
I was expecting a line like that literally the entire time I've been watching the show. Like, I know she's going to say this.
I hate this line. Oh my god. This
is
so
bad. I hate myself,
but
I love it.
It's like a thing parents say, like, "You're the best thing I ever did in my life."
This is
so
blunt.
It's a line we've heard everywhere. Like,
it's so blunt.
It's
so stereotypical. So I would like to know...
Yeah, Dylan, it's stereotypical, but you know what? Sometimes people follow norms.
I would like to...
Oh my god.
Well, it's intentionally written in a TV show, like...
Yeah,
what people say in TV shows is not the same. So I would like to now
you
rank.
Know my father has never said this to me.
Why are you Asami? I don't know.
The fact remains that it's any kind of inventor dad. This is what they say. Like, there's a book of things inventor dads say, and this is number one.
We will now rank the three worst lines in Korra history. I will give you the options. Number one, this is just a ploy to get more power. Tenzin, season one. Number two, the names change, but the streets stay the same. Toph, episode three. Number four, you are the greatest thing I ever created. This episode.
Number
What's the worst?
Is, that's just
I didn't think number two
power.
Was that bad of a line.
Actually, I think that's the worst. Actually, that's
number.
I don't. That's so
this
bad.
Is just a ploy for you to get more power. Is number one. That
I think it's still
my
favorite.
No problem with that.
It
line.
Is also number two and number.
Wait,
three.
Which line?
Yeah.
First one.
No.
It's
no.
The first one.
I thought you wouldn't take issue with this line, if anything. Oh my goodness. So, these lines are all related.
Okay, if we're going to be fair, the shot made the line better.
Yeah, Asami crying was, it was very well done. Yeah. But that being said, so these lines all relate in terms of their terribleness because they are incredibly blunt and state something that you could just say by showing it. It's like, Mel, I think Mel talked about this last week, like show instead of tell. Like, this is
montage
just
montage of everything Hiroshi
like,
has created and then Asami.
This is like telling us the plot. Like, this is the theme of the episode. It's like top dialogue.
We can't show him creating Asami on children's television.
No, I didn't just moments of Asami. Obviously, I didn't want a scene of Asami's conception, okay?
Are you sure? I think that's what you were saying.
No, it wasn't.
Okay, Kuvira invites Mexing Bull into her inner circle, and Mel comments, "Death Eater, obviously."
Yes. Okay, no one actually says inner circle. Like, no one...
Yeah, that's a dumb...
No one does that.
Yeah,
that isn't even a circle, it's two people.
That's a line thing.
She's gonna marry Bolin too now?
You guys are gonna make... You're gonna make us a crowd, Bolin.
I think you can make... Yeah, you can make a triangle now. You had a slime before. Can,
love triangle. That would be an interesting love triangle.
Should they have said inner circle? Should they have said inner sanctum instead of inner circle?
That would have been better. Sanctum, I would have been...
Enter our confidence.
Confidence.
Or
it's...
join our club. Anything's better than
the Illuminati.
Club,
that would have been better.
I don't know. Bolin is excited but concerned by the army. The army is here to present strength. You are here to present peace. No, it's
present peace.
No, she uses a different word. To the
no,
army. the army is here to blank strength, to
demonstrate
strength.
It was, I don't think strength. It was the same P word each time. I think it was different. Like, I actually liked that line because they didn't use present twice. Maybe I'm wrong though.
Parallel structure for the win. Woo.
Yeah, I think this is a good line. This is a consistent Kuvira being able to just convince Bolin of, like, that she's doing good, that it's like, oh, this is just for facade. Like, that seems to be a thread that resonates with Bolin. Like, this is just for show, but this is the actual thing.
Yeah. What is she going to do? Like, what is going to happen to him after he goes to that re-education camp, guys? I'm really afraid.
Is he actually going to go to the re-education camp? That's my thing.
I mean, they're probably going to be there for at least an episode, and then they're going to break him out.
This is the last time we see Bolin, the rest of the show.
Okay.
He dies.
Yeah, he dies. And then she dies, yeah. Bolin goes to talk to Sue and Opal. Okay.
Well, first off, there's an incredible amount of people there. Like, that's
In this room. Okay, so they go to the room where what scene happens here in book three?
They're just talking, like, it's...
Yeah, I think they're just talking.
Someone...
So in the scene is...
like, Sue's showing off her stuff.
Sue, Batar Sr., and all the children, all of her children.
You know, I totally forgot Opal was actually one of their childs. Like, oh, it's someone from the Air Nation is there. Yeah. Just because...
Skrillex changed his hair.
I was shocked Opal was there.
Yeah, what color did he have in his hair?
There's, like, a green color in it.
Yeah. can we call him Skrillex anymore?
I don't see why not.
Okay.
Art school Skrillex.
Yeah, exactly. Art school Skrillex. Wei and Wang. Bolin has that that thing with them, and
that was funny.
Brief mention. A lot of people were anticipating a Jinora and Kai reunion here. Is Kai here because Opal's here? Not clear. One would assume that Kai is also in Zaofu, but I think we would assume.
I'm just gonna leave you in Zaofu, Opal. Call me if you need a ride back. Like, that's not gonna happen.
Yeah, obviously Kai's like, I'm gonna go chill over here.
I feel like it doesn't make sense that he wouldn't have been.
Yeah,
in
like
scene.
I was saying,
yeah, but, like, he's not in any scene.
Like,
but
I don't know.
See him.
Yeah, so
well,
I think
we
he
only
might...
had one scene in Zaofu, and
so he might just
what
be
he gonna do in the Inner Sanctum. Stand around. He's like 12.
He might just be in another town or back at Air Temple Island. I don't know.
Could be waiting outside the room.
Because Jinora was in the room. Yeah, we had Jinora, Yuki, and Milo and Korra come in. Yeah, so
maybe he had to use the bathroom. Who knows?
There we go.
Can I comment on earlier, since my internet was bad?
Yes.
Milo is very annoying, and I don't like him.
Yeah, I did not. I was not a fan of Milo here either.
He needs to stop.
He needs to stop? I mean, he's going to talk.
Get rid of him.
I would have preferred Iki talk at the expense of Milo, as opposed to the opposite. Bolin says sides, there are no sides. So Opal says you've chosen your side. Opal's mad at him.
They gonna break up.
I'm just still completely on the Opal side of this fight. Like,
everyone's on the Opal side of this fight. I just want Bolin to...
There's not a Bolin side.
Like, I don't know. Like, I honestly, like, I ship Opal, but not right now. Like, I'm team Opal being on her own, I think, right now.
Yeah.
I'm team Bolin getting his life together, deciding that he's made some terrible decisions, and then them getting back together and being happy forever and having lots of cute children. Then
he's just really naive.
I agree with Sam.
I don't know about like them getting back together. Like, I think it's what's going to happen, but I don't know. I don't know if I'll buy it. Like, Bolin's kind of like, Bolin just doesn't care about Opal right now. Like, which is fine. He's allowed, but it's kind of a big divide between them. Either way, I'm still... Opal's still incredible. I don't know. Her new design's great. Opal's amazing. I love her. Anyway, anything else? But conversation between Beifangs and Kuvira. Okay. So Batar is like... They're like, Batar, what are you doing? And he's like, I was just living in... I'm tired. What, should I come back and live in your shadow again?
Dad's face is...
And
the
then
best.
They're all like...
The face, like, he makes.
And I'm like, that's not that bad. Why are you reacting like he just said, should I come? Like, okay,
no,
lives in your
it's
shadow.
It's all about potential. Like,
this is literally every son and father in the history of the world. Why is this shocking? I don't understand.
Just because Batar Jr. and Batar Sr. make the same faces, and it's great. like the face he makes, Batar Jr. is the carbon copy of Batar Sr. Like, Batar Sr. makes the same face that Batar Jr. made when Kuvira's like, no, we're not going to blow up Zaofu. And, like, he's like, oh, they make the same face.
Sue accuses Kuvira brainwashing Batar, and Kuvira's like, ha, no. I like how
Kuvira looks spectacular in that shot.
I like how Sue accuses Batar Jr. of being he's accused of being brainwashed, and Kuvira rejects it for him.
Yes,
yeah.
It's great. No, he hasn't been brainwashed. Yeah. By me.
Oh, also another scene of, but all Batar does is open doors for Kuvira.
Yes, I was going to mention that.
All he's a butler.
Except at the end, he's like, open the door.
It's the perk of being in the inner circle.
He's second in command. Why aren't people opening doors for him more? Yeah, I don't understand.
It's his fiance.
Maybe he's just being polite. Maybe he's a gentleman. Yeah. Maybe Sue taught him manners.
Yeah, exactly. Bolin, Mel says Bolin tries to referee. That's a good description. Bolin tells the story of the town they helped. But originally, they had no Sodom bills. By the time we were done, they had two! And water, exactly. And a train running through them. And then Opal says, when you're gone, there's forced slave labor. And I'm like, what? Like, that's not what we thought was happening beforehand. So it's an interesting portrayal, because this episode pretty conclusively confirms this, using slave labor in the towns after they leave. But in episode one, we don't see that, so we're kind of seeing from Bolin's perspective. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, we haven't really seen outside perspective yet.
Yeah.
Like, we've seen what they've seen in, like, Republic City, and that's probably pretty skewed, because Kuvira can probably control them seeing what she wants them to see. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, I feel like making Raiko and Tenzin believe that everything's fine, it's probably not that hard.
By the way, Delaney, thoughts on Batar Jr.?
I hate him. He sucks. Like, he's awful.
He makes me such a little brat.
He is. Like, you guys are talking about maybe Sue taught him manners. He's the rudest person to his mother. Like, be nice to your mom, and you're rude to your dad, and I hate you.
I don't know.
He's not a southern gentleman.
Exactly. Thank you, Brent.
I find this amusing. I kind of feel where Batar Jr. is coming from. Like,
no, I hate him.
I don't know.
Are you a little brat, Dylan?
Not from that angle, but from the just, like worshipping Kuvira angle, right?
Oh, no, I worship Kuvira,
like,
too.
I understand.
Like, I'm not going to be rude to my mom, because I love Kuvira, like... That's why I don't like Batar.
I don't know. I like their relationship because he's, like, clearly submissive. I think it's,
yes,
like,
I do
like, not something that would
normally
be
portrayed.
Except
I want to
take
Kuvira, but yes.
Yeah, exactly. Kuvira gives Sue 24 hours to agree to terms, or she will use force.
You know, okay, so you know how book two is all about 10,000 years? This season's 24 hours.
Kuvira is not about
24
that
hours
Batu
until
time.
You die.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. Okay, act two. The kids see Kuvira's army as they're going over there.
She's kind of a puny army, if that's her entire army.
That's
like,
a giant army. What are you talking about?
No, the army's huge.
No, there were like maybe 10,000 soldiers.
No,
that's not
army. Okay, did you count?
Do you know?
Well, it's like the train seat. Like, when they're on the train, it's ridiculous how many people there are.
Yeah, there's
there's a lot more in that scene than the rest of the soldiers.
It doesn't really matter though, because it's going to be siege warfare, and I don't know if she has the tools for siege
I'm skeptical of us seeing a big fight next episode.
I don't know.
I told you they're going to close the thing, and then she's going to be like, Bolin, melt it, and he'll be like.
Like, I think either way, whether it's Sue's covert team taking out Kuvira, or like do it then, or vice versa, you know.
If one of them
goes down in some manner, then this whole battle is dissipated.
It's
going
to be like spy versus spy. It's going to be awful.
Yeah, that's what it's going to be like. Where are we? Sue and Korra meet. Sue is happy and tells her everyone was worried. Okay, good.
Good. Good. Everybody was worried. Awesome.
Bolin and Kuvira. Kuvira says they sometimes use other methods to force loyalty. Bolin questions slave labor. These people are my loyal subjects, and they contribute to the empire however I see fit. That's an interesting way to phrase that, yeah.
Yes.
Thank you, Kuvira, for sounding like...
Literally every dictator
like
ever.
Like a fascist dictator, yeah. Kuvira accuses Bolin of choosing Opal over the cause and threatens to send them to a re-education camp.
Kuvira backs everyone into objects around her, and it's great. Like, Kuvira makes everyone...
She did, yeah.
And backs them into objects. Like, backs them into... Was it a desk or was it the wall? I thought it was a desk.
It was a desk, I think, yeah.
Yeah. She backs she makes the governor cower in his seat. Like, Kuvira, you're great. You tower over everyone. And all the shots of her are her towering over whoever she's talking to. It's great.
It's carefully selected scenes, portrayals, yeah. Sue and Korra. Sue says, okay, so now we get the backstory scene of Sue and Kuvira. I thought this was blunt. But that
they're
being said,
telling, not showing.
Well, they are showing a little bit, but mostly they're just putting, they're flashing back to scenes where they can tell, right? Like, we're showing, but only so much that you can tell us in the showing. Sue says Kuvira was like a daughter. So this part is telling, not showing. We don't see that. We didn't see that last episode. It would have been a more interesting dynamic if we saw
Kuvira
as Sue's daughter.
Really, really, really bad.
Does she say eight?
Yes, she says eight.
So... they took her
but
in.
But why did she take her in when she was eight is the question.
So, rule of how TV tropes work is that we will see Kuvira at eight at some point. That's kind of how stories work for female characters. We always see them when they're young. It's kind of applied to all of Avatar, actually, if you look back. But she was a natural... I don't know. If we didn't see her like this now, I doubt we'll see her in the future, though. She's a natural leader. Raiko and Tenzin wanted... to fill the power vacuum with Sue, but she rejected. Kuvira wanted to take charge, caused a rift between them. Kuvira left without permission with the security force, Batara Jr. and Varric. And if you leave now, you will never be welcome back. When I choose to return, it will be on my own terms. Kuvira proved herself by stabilizing Ba Sing Sam, was appointed provisional head of the Earth Kingdom by Raiko. Mel said, Bolin joined later, I guess. Mel says, I have questions about Raiko's extent of power. I agree. That
yeah, like Raiko, who made you in charge? Like, what are you even in charge of?
He's kind of in charge of the world. It's an interesting, like, weird, bizarro of all our world where the UN security general, like, has a lot of power. Like, that seems like what's going on here with Raiko.
Yeah,
seems like if there is no existing power structure, if he just feels so inclined, you can sort of insert himself into that role.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like that's a lot of it. It's just him and Tenzin are like, well, no one else is going to do it. I guess we can.
He's like the default leader. It would be very, like, Raiko's the first of his kind having sole power over Republic City and the United Forces and everything like that. And I actually think that speaks really well to Raiko's character, that he's restrained, like, he's only exerting whatever power he seems to have on his own. Like, I feel like a lot of other people just try to overextend their bounds here. I don't know, a lot of people, like, hate Raiko, but I feel like he's being portrayed.
He's not terrible, he's just...
Yeah. Yeah, like, I don't know, I feel like he's kind of sympathetic in a lot of scenes.
Yeah, he's not terrible, he's not, like, evil, he's just a politician.
Yeah.
Well, I just wish they would outline more, like, what the United Republic of Nations means to the world.
They will not do that, don't worry.
I just wish, because it would make more sense with what Raiko's doing if they would just explain it a little bit more.
So this whole backstory, two thoughts, I guess, initially. One, why is Kuvira in this meeting with the three world leaders that she has
rejected? Because she's a protege, obviously.
Because she's what?
She's a protege.
Do they think Tenzin's going to assassinate Sue?
Yeah, I don't know.
Why is she there?
Yeah, I don't know
what's
going on.
For every King of Crown, for every King of Air, and Sue is there, and she probably was grooming Kuvira to take over after her.
No wonder Batara Jr.'s bitter.
What do you mean I can't have the city, Mommy?
No.
So then he goes with the person who's going to replace him,
Yeah.
Okay, second note I had...
He has a lot of emotional issues, Dylan. Don't make it worse.
About this...
a lot of feelings.
Yeah, about this whole flashback is the... I really like how Kuvira described Sue's security force, which I don't know if we referred to that as that last season. Wasn't it like...
No, I think they said...
It was security force.
It was security force. I guess we called them metal-bending whatever... police or I don't know
cops.
Whatever they were, where to refer to them as. I like the I like the reasoning. Like, this is like, these are some of the best fighters in the world, and you're keeping them caged up.
Literally,
I thought that was
exotic
realistic.
Literally.
Yeah, because we did. It seemed really striking last season. Kind of to an extent where it's like, is this bad writing or is this a plot point? Of where, like, there are these just incredible competent people on, like, the White Lotus who were just in Zhao Fu, right? That's odd.
Yeah, they were given all this skill, like. Sue, you gave us all this skill, and now you just want to keep us here.
Yeah,
we want to save the world.
I actually think this was really well set up and like a subtle, like they had a line about it, but it's like in a significant thing that they didn't dwell on too long, that they set up well last season. Like, I actually think this is a really good job for once.
And this explains why Sue doesn't like Kuvira at all. Like, not only did you leave, not only did you take my son, you also like emptied my entire city of its.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's completely undermining everything she stood for. She wanted this utopia where she could have this little insular world that she could troll and, like, have these great things. And just Kuvira's like, nope.
Yeah, she breaks up a lot of that. I mean, probably taking her security forces, a lot of the city's population,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. And
well, it seemed like everyone was a guard. You were either a dancer or a guard.
That's true.
And sometimes both.
Or an artist.
Or your rich citizen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is also like how Zhao Fu doesn't stand a chance, because no one in their security forces now is older than 3 years in the service.
Yeah.
Yeah, assuming she took all of them.
Veterans.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the only reason they would have a chance is because the city has such good security with the
domes
or whatever, the Lotus Petal dome metal things. Although, you know, Kavir could just bend them open again, maybe.
Yeah.
why not? Sue tells Korra, okay, maybe one of the most interesting parts of the episode. Sue tells Korra, you need to go into the Avatar State and wipe out her army.
So kill everybody. Kill everybody. That's what Sue thinks.
Now, I will say they were pushing that. They've been pushing that pretty hard in this episode. Like
everyone needs to.
It's not quite up in the sinuses, but it's there.
This is interesting to me from a historical Avatar universe perspective. I don't know, has Korra ever done this? Like, went into the Avatar State and wiped a lot of people out. This is an Aang thing.
Yeah, this is an Aang
this
thing.
This is an Aang specialty. Why are we... Aang wasn't portrayed as having... When Aang did this, he didn't have control over what he was doing.
Yeah.
But Korra, for some reason...
He went all the way.
Korra hasn't gone in the Avatar State much, and when she has, she... Does she have control? It's been a while. I don't remember.
She does.
Yeah, she has control. Yeah. Remember?
She raced.
Well, that was the thing. Like, she was.
Oh yeah, in season two, they portrayed her as having mastered the Avatar State. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, didn't really do anything important with it, though. So.
But, she finally goes into the Avatar State and she can control it.
Yeah, so this
can
is
bypass the whole thing with
Korra. So Korra says, fighting is something old me would do. That always made things worse. Old Korra never went into the Avatar State and wiped people out. Like,
yeah.
But she did fight.
She did fight, though. I think this is a really interesting way for Korra to approach this. It's not like we've seen Korra's journey and now she's back and she's learned the error of her ways and of violence. That's not what the past episode said. This is Korra approaching situations in a new way.
Or attempting to.
Do you guys have thoughts on
resolution skill?
Yeah, Sam, what do you think of Korra? What do you think of Korra emerging and having this opinion now?
I don't know. It seems kind of fresh. Rushed almost. Like, I don't know. I don't feel like, you know, one bison ride would like change her opinion on everything. But then again, it's been 3 years since she's kind of punched people in the face.
She does seem overall much less.
Calmer.
Much calmer, much less fighty.
She's not as boisterous.
Much less
pugnacious. Hard to say timid.
Yeah, honestly,
she definitely seems a little timid, yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting. I mean, they just showed her using the she just got the Avatar State back, and she's not gung-ho to use it.
Yeah.
So I think this might tie into her being afraid to use it.
She's a little bit afraid.
More stuff, yes.
I think she's afraid of what she could do in it. I think she's afraid of reverting to her past self. I think she's afraid of making mistakes again and and getting hurt again like she was. And,
I like this opinion you have.
Yes.
And I really like this Korra, I guess.
Yeah.
You know.
She's interesting. She's very interesting.
Much more relatable to me, I guess, than previous
has a lot of death
attacky
death.
People.
Yeah. She's gotten a lot of death.
Korra wants to talk to Kavira, and Sue says Kavira doesn't listen to reason.
Ooh. And it's kind of interesting going from having been with Toph now or with another Beifong and like the way they're approaching and like trying to tell her what to do and
does literally anybody in this universe listen to reason?
Well, it's interesting.
Who listens to reason?
And this is very Ozai-like. Like this is just like how everyone in Avatar was like, "Aang, you have to kill the Fire Lord."
You
gotta kill Kuvira.
See, I actually see this as more of like an indictment on Sue than on Kuvira. I know Sue's saying it, but I feel like Kuvira kind of does. We've seen Kuvira as being somewhat logical. However, Sue is very set in her ways.
Oh, like, I wasn't saying like this was
like she has. I mean, I'm not negating something you're saying. I'm just saying in general. Like I think Sue is obviously has progressive views, but she doesn't. She's very set in them, and like she just when she's talking with Kavira, it's just not like a discussion. It's like an instant argument, and I fault that with Sue rather than Kavira. I think.
Well, yeah. I mean, just the whole
the problem with Sue and Kavira is they're much more alike than they're willing to admit.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, inherently,
Not inherently, you know what I mean. They have certain traits because Sue raised her, and you gain certain attitudes and beliefs from the environment which you were raised in. And
well, you know,
most of them even
Kavira would have those.
Mm-hmm.
Avatar, I mean, a lot of Korra has been new versus old, and a lot of this is Sue trying to, like, she has all these progressive ideas, but she's still stuck in the old. Like, she's not actually implementing a lot of her new ideas. Kuvira is the new generation. She's willing to go that extra step to do everything that Sue has set up to do, but she won't do.
I wouldn't describe it as Kuvira's set in the old. I would describe it as Kuvira's...
No, Sue's set in the old.
I wouldn't describe it as Sue's set in the old. I would describe it as she is taking her ideals and part of her that is, like, not wanting, like, to seize power of things.
Well, I just mean, like, Kuvira is implementing, like, that's the idea of...
Kuvira's, like, so to a certain... Kuvira's implementing these progressive views, but it's not... It's, like, by doing so, she's kind of in... She's contradicting what Sue believes in, right?
Well, a lot of times Sue contradicts herself.
I'm not sure if that's true. I think Sue has been pretty consistent.
I feel like Sue has... I agree with Kuvira on a lot of points where it doesn't make sense the things Sue... Like, she's created the city, but she doesn't want them to leave. You would think the idea would be that to, like, let them go and do the things they want to do, but she's just created this bubble. So in a way, she's done a lot of what Toph's done. Like, she's sealed herself off. She doesn't want to get involved.
They literally
live in a bubble.
Yeah, so I think
she's
that's...
She's a non-interventionist. I think it's her duty or her place to fix the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so yeah. I think that's consistent with her views and with her character. She's always just wanted to stay in this bubble. That's not, like, something that's contradicted what she's done in the past. I think it only appears
it just,
like
it's an
that
odd mixture
you, like,
with her progressive views. Is what
I think I guess I agree, but I think that's only if you have, like, a bias of what, like, she might believe given other, like, historical facts, you know, which we obviously inherently do, but I think if you look just at Sue and her character herself, she's just been this way since episode 5 of last season.
I mean, I don't think Sue's inconsistent. Like, that's not what I was saying. Like, I was saying, like, her, like, it's, she's a strange character.
Okay.
To me. I think that's fine. That's fair. But I would say she's, I just don't think she's illogical or inconsistent or anything. I just think she's just very consistently portrayed and believes in staying within her realms of what she believes people should have in terms of power, and that's kind of why she didn't like the queen.
She's
terrible. Yeah, like, I don't know. Episode 5 looks even more impressive, I think, actually, looking at what's going on in the season, like how dependent the past two seasons have been on Zhao Fu and the portrayal of Sue. It's even more impressive that was all set up in one episode.
Yes.
I think looking back, 305 might be seen as the strongest episode in all of Korra, but we'll see. Where even were we? I don't even know. Okay, back to Asami. She had this small Asami scene of her sitting in Avatar Korra Park.
Yep.
And seeing a girl and her dad.
So, still a terrible name for a park.
But she goes to the Korra statue when she's feeling
very
sad.
Important.
I don't know. I don't know if that's because
hidden
it's
Korra
the only. I don't know if that's the only. This. I would say this is hidden Korra Sami because it's also the only park in existence. So it's not necessarily like she has choices here.
You don't know that.
There are no other parks. Have you seen one?
Because they're both in Republic City.
They're what?
Hidden Masami, because they're the only ones at Team Avatar in Republic City.
They're still I don't know if that's hidden. I think they're obviously hooking up, right? Like.
Obviously.
Back to Varric. Varric has been locked up in that train car. He has cabin fever, says Mel. Julie, hold your breath. I'm not holding my breath, sir.
That was beautiful. She was just like, nope.
Great, now we're both going to die. Yeah, like, yeah. So, okay. Here's the point I want to make, which I don't think a lot of people are maybe taking away from this episode that I think is important. This episode is intentionally portraying Varric's behavior towards Julie as reprehensible several times. This is one of them.
Yes.
Basically, Varric's being a giant jerk to Julie.
Yes.
And she notices that she has a reaction every time. This is one of them. Another one before is... We didn't talk about the...
It was the broom sweeping.
The romance thing was the first suit. We didn't talk about that from the romance angle. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mel, come on with the outline.
Come on, Mel.
Let's quickly go back to that. So,
she put literally pepper.
When she saves... So I guess that's what you meant. So she saves...
I don't understand your freaking Marvel things.
Yeah.
Mel,
come on. We don't...
What do you mean you don't understand? I've never seen that movie. How, Sam?
Have you seen anything? Are you
literally
alive?
Like, in pepper. Like, it's just... That's all you need to know.
I don't understand.
Okay. So...
Okay. This is an Avatar podcast.
Mark's made it down. So when Varric flings her back up, they have the moment, and Julie.
Varric.
So and Julie seems into it, and Varric just pushes her off at some point, right?
I thought they were gonna kiss.
I thought that was great, and I was gonna be like, I still ship it.
A lot of people. So the big question going out of this is Julie faking it at the Underdog? And everyone's like, oh, of course she's faking it. So
I think she might be.
I don't know.
I think this episode is legitimately posing the question and provides evidence on both sides. And I'm gonna give you the she is not faking it. She's actually just fed up with Varric argument. The anti that argument is, oh, she had this romantic scene with Varric, and she's always been loyal to him.
And she defends him literally every 2 minutes.
Yeah, but here we are, and I'm gonna bring it up several times. Varric just is very mean to her. This is one of the scenes he's like literally saying his life is more important than hers, and he's not really a sarcastic person. Like, he's kind of face value, I feel like, even when he's joking. So I mean, obviously he's not gonna like do anything about it, but at the same time, I do think that he's basically saying I value my life more than yours. Like.
Yeah,
I don't know if I think that it's like
how she just doesn't react. She's just like, "That's nice, Varric."
She's like, I think she seems pissed off, but it's more evident later.
Yeah.
Bolin comes to talk to him.
She could be like fed up with his behavior and just be annoyed at him, but still not want him to die or bad things to happen to him, kind of a deal.
So it's just more fed up with a child, I think,
well,
which is usually how she...
I mean, he's being, like, he's fine. Like, he's not actually dying. She's just like, shut up, you're fine.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's the bad behavior towards her is real, though. So.
Yeah.
Bolin comes to talk to him. They're both realized that Kuvir is crazy.
Rose for life.
Sam, thoughts on use of crazy, the word crazy here?
I don't like it.
Yeah,
I didn't like it.
Do you think it's more or less... okay than normal, or is it just a normal bad use of crazy?
I think any use of crazy is bad. Mm-hmm. Like, people use crazy as a synonym for like not good.
Yeah.
Like, people use crazy as a synonym for the word bad, which I think should stop.
It's definitely in a negative connotation.
It's like a hyperbole. Almost.
But it also means mentally ill, and it's degrading to mental illness, right? So that's the general point, is why the word crazy is bad. So Kuvir is insane, I think, would have been a better word here. Insane still
refers to it. I think evil,
if
they had both like grabbed each other's collars and been like, you guys are, Kuvir is evil.
Yeah.
I also don't understand why they would arrive at a, like, I understand maybe why these two people would arrive at a Kuvira's crazy conclusion, but that's not what the episode portrays at all.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. Kuvira has ill intentions, but she's very logical and poised, right?
Well, like, and Varric talking and then Bolin talking, it's like, Bolin, like, you need to chill. Like, when Varric talks about what he saw and then Bolin, it's like, these two things actually don't equal each other, but that's okay, whatever, we're just gonna move on.
Yeah.
They don't equal each other.
And they're actions, I guess. Their body language, there you go.
Yeah, no, the body language.
It was quite funny.
They're bros for life.
Yeah, no, I despite the use of crazy, which is one of those bad things that is just constantly used, so you almost kind of have to ignore it. I think the scene was still good. And then they escape out of the hatch.
If they had just said that and hadn't had the body language, it probably wouldn't have been that funny, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's
they looked like
they
were about to make out, and I was like,
You do ship it.
I ship all the things.
what's the name for this? I mean, I'm pretty sure people ship this. Varilin? Bolric?
I've seen Varilin.
Varilin?
Like,
have you actually,
like,
or are you just making
it's a
it
thing,
up?
Yes.
No, I don't think
I like that
you
name, Varilin.
No, it's a thing.
I don't believe you.
It's a thing. No, it's a thing.
I believe it's a thing.
I mean, I believe it's a thing. I don't believe Delaney's, like, remembers
the
ship name. And, like...
No, it's Varilin. I will show
okay,
you.
So this proves that you secretly ship it and like, track the tag and, like...
I don't track the tag. It happens. You know what
it is. I figured it out. You track the tag. Okay. The Brit's like, I should track that tag, yeah. So then Cora goes to talk to Kuvira.
I'm serious, I'm tracking you right now.
This extends to next scene. So goes to talk to Kuvira, Cora asks her to leave, and Cora asks her to leave, Kuvira says, we both know that's not gonna happen. Cut
to
act three.
I like when Mel puts in the outline, Kuvira denies her.
Yeah.
That sounds like a romantic thing. Like, Kuvira just denies Cora.
This I know is a ship. So
I can't.
That one, this one I know.
Kuvira is great. Kuvira is a great ship.
Kuvira. Whoa. I like how the past two seasons people randomly ship Cora with new female characters. Like, it was Opal last season. That was a thing for a little bit. They kind of had a scene. What is that noise? They kind of had a scene, though.
It's not me.
In episode five. We'll see in a minute. Okay. I don't know how Britt knows that. Cora tells Kuvira what she's doing is wrong. Very blunt about it. No evidence cited. Kuvira cites Korra's absence as causing chaos, and Kuvira had to try to calm it.
This is a great standoff, for the record. Like, the fact that they're just standing and talking is great.
In public, too. It's interesting. Kuvira says, people have been mad at me for making tough decisions. And Korra's like, well, I can relate to that. And people have...
It's a ship that sells itself.
It's a thing that resonates with Korra here, based on leaving the spirit portals open in particular, among other things. Kuvira calls for a truce for Korra to talk to Sue, then return with an answer, and Korra agrees. So I think what's interesting, like, this is one of my favorite scenes of the episode. It's really interesting how Korra approaches this, because she goes in, she's heard Kuvira's bad. She's like, Kuvira, what you're doing is wrong. Kuvira's like, no, what do you know? And she's like, people are just mad at me for doing something you've been doing, and we're the same, right? And Korra is like, I'll go talk to Sue. You know, like, I think Korra's less stubborn, more receptive to what other people are saying right now.
Well, it's in direct contrast to Zaheer. She's like, no, you're evil. And then even when he was talking to her, she's like, no. Do you know what I mean? Like, when Jaibal's Grove, like, it's in direct, like, there's the parallel, and it's anti-parallel, and it's great.
Bovira. Britt links a gif of Bovira boss girlfriend, same thing. That's the tag. That's the tag for the ship.
That Kuvira is in love with Bolin.
How many Bolin ships are there? How many Kuvira ships are there? Just a lot.
Kuvira's shipped with everyone, and it's great. There's Kuvira and Sue. Kuvira and Sue. Kuvira and Opal. That's also a ship.
That's also a ship. That's a weird ship. Okay.
Least Bolin and...
like a messenger girl this entire episode.
Bolin?
Korra.
Korra, yeah, she's going back.
Yeah, that's
back.
What I felt like, too. So
Korra, are you an owl?
It's interesting. That's an interesting perspective. Like, obviously what she's doing is she's trying to intervene as the Avatar, but it ends up she doesn't have any effect on the proceedings, and it's just going back and forth between them. Yeah,
but she doesn't really have any power in this situation. Does that make sense? Like,
no, and I think it's a good point, because this kind of shows the depowering of the Avatar here, right? Like,
and she just shows up. Like, she doesn't really know what's been going on, and
I also like Kuvira's reaction to Batar bringing Korra over. It's like, hey, it's the Avatar. She's talking to, by the way, when that happened, she's talking to, I didn't check their patches too heavily, but those seem to be her, like, top military people. One would presume, based on some assumptions, and that she's planning for the inevitable invasion with them. Because we don't
see... three patches.
There are three patches, which is higher than Bolin, yeah. So we don't see that ever happen, like, if you're planning what she's going to do. She's always just with Batar, and they don't really seem to be talking about it that much. But here we have her with... She seems to have top military advisors. Like, last week, I think I said that if Kuvira were to go... Or 2 weeks ago, Kuvira were to go down, I don't think there'd be anything behind her, because we haven't been presented with a power structure. We haven't been presented with anyone else. Here, you start to see that maybe there are people who would take over for her.
Well, I believe there was a bit of that in the hotel lobby in the Republic City. Mm-hmm. Because Batar was there, but so were the advisors.
So were the advisors, yeah. Maybe I just didn't notice them, yeah. But here I did notice. Again,
They're pro the outer circle.
We need to give them names so we can ship them with Kuvira.
Oh, good, okay.
Steve and Robbie.
Okay.
Robbie, I really like
Steve and Robbie. Okay, there you go.
I ship Kuvira and Robbie.
Reminds me of that.
I ship Kuvira and Steve, so...
Oh, well, ship wars, okay. Ship wars. But what I like about this scene as a portrayal of Greer is she's not, like, surprised or shocked or mad that Korra's here. Korra here could be very bad news for her, but she's just very poised. She takes it in stride. This isn't something that she'd planned for.
Kuvira's never unsettled. Like, when the train almost crashed, Kuvira's like, no, I'm chill. Like, she just doesn't get unsettled. It's great.
Yeah. She has no emotion. Or she doesn't, like, show emotion.
She doesn't show emotions.
She's very in control.
Mm-hmm.
Which is awesome. I love it about
her. She's adaptable and, not necessarily planning everything in advance, but still in control of it regardless.
She can adapt, like you said.
Yeah.
She doesn't have to plan in advance.
Yeah, which I like.
She can think on her feet, which is good.
Yeah.
She's clever bot.
And the continuous characterization of it is good.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoy I like saying it again and again.
Skype test call, that's Kavira.
That's Kavira. Yeah. That would be great if the Skype test call was just Kavira's voice. Yeah.
So great.
Bolin, Varric, and Julie escape in mecha tanks. And they disagree about... So Varric says, this place is doomed. We should go to Republic City. And Bolin's like, I don't know. And then Bizarre attacks them, so...
Yeah, okay. Yes, it's standard. We're on our way.
I theorized this from last episode. It's like, ooh, that'd be cool if the tower was in the green one.
Yeah. The black one, right?
Black one.
Yeah.
The other two.
When we learned at the Comic-Con panel, the black one's a higher rank, yeah. Fight scene, CGI. This is great. If you're not aware, Sam has taken issue with the CGI in Korra many times in the past. Sam, would you say that whose fault is the CGI? Do you know?
What do you mean, whose fault is the CGI?
It's like I would say it's not storyboarder Will Ruzicka's fault for boarding the scene. It's like comes in at a higher level, right? Is it Brian's fault for this decision? I don't know.
I don't know.
Is it the machine they use to like draw the CGI?
See, I think you just
it might be.
I think you just like don't like CGI in general.
No, CGI is fine. It just looked like so bad up against the backgrounds. Like it looked like a completely different show.
I think it looked different.
Like I think it was fine, but it was very clear that the tanks were not like animated like everything else was, I think. Which has been the case in the past. They're always done like that, but
It didn't look like the same show. It looked like I was watching a completely different show.
I was watching
the Transformers where like the one that came out in the late 90s or early 2000s, it was a show or whatever, who knows. Or like, But Ugly Martians.
I agree.
One of those weird, like, early CGI shows, that's what it felt like.
The mecha tanks have flamethrowers, also electric-y things. Julie talks more. Mel is very pointing out that Julie talks a lot in this. It's hard to keep
track. The fact that Julie is an expert in these machines is amazing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Varric is who designed these, and she's you did, sir. Varric says, enough lecturing, more saving my life. Yeah, that was a good one. Good exchange.
Hiroshi did design the original mechatanks, but these are new.
So evidence number two of Julie possibly being fed up with Varric is Varric telling her enough lecturing, more saving my life. Yeah. And then later,
Julie.
And then the big one is later. But Bitar threatens to kill Varric, and they're taking him prisoner. So here is when the big one is. So what happens if you try to keep track of what's going on in the scene, which is kind of hard?
It is hard because they don't have very contrasting colors.
Yeah, that's there. And is that like Julie goes after. Bitar or whatever, or the opposite, and the other two are taken out by Bolin, and then we kind of see it from Bolin's perspective, and then at the end Bitar is captured Varric, and then he's like, thanks a lot, Julie, because she was the one who was going after
him. And Varric disabled her mecha tank.
And then Varric earlier had shocked her instead of the others. And then she says, thanks a lot, Julie, and then you see a shot of Julie looking pissed off, looking sideways. That's the big evidence, I would say, in terms of Julie's actually just done with him.
That's what's so great about that final scene, is they've built it up so well in the episode. With both, like, making it an actual question. They did such a good job. Like, that's why I like, I mean, the fact that we have evidence is, like, why this is so
great. I think this episode works better if you watch it a few times and look at the details. Yeah.
I only watched it once.
Yeah. Like, I mean, that's, I think
most people, to me, is, like,
the
minimum to, like, really appreciate it.
So I think this episode might be first and foremost to me in terms of Korra not having enough time to function as episodes. Like I think if this was a 30-minute episode, which if they knew they were going online, they could just shoot for 30 minutes, and then if it's 29, who cares? If it's 33, who cares, right? That's kind of how HBO shows work. They vary in running length based on the content of the episode. And if they could just more naturally let the scenes flow, which is not how their production process works, so it'd be a lot of changes. They have scripts correlating to a certain time amount, which is how they storyboard the scenes. They seem very constricted, and they don't have a lot of time to expand these things out in terms of setting up the Julie thing. I think that's not obvious upon first viewing that she might, like, to me it just seems obvious that she is going to be loyal to Varric on first viewing. But then if you look into more details, maybe she is actually fed up with him, in addition to the depth of Korra and Kuvira's portrayals.
I do think the pacing is good.
I believe you have to actually look to believe that she's always going to be loyal to him.
You have to. You think you have to look to get the always
to get that she's loyal to him and not taking it. Like, I think they make the fact that she's mad at him
more obvious.
They
I think
that really clear. But
I think within this episode, maybe that is more obvious. I wonder what the more casual fan thinks, right? Like, I think us were more attuned to thinking that this is just going to be Julie loyal to Varric. At the same time, a lot of people have been anticipating a Julie revolt, so I'm not sure.
Oh, by the same token, she's still defending him. Like, she does a lot of things. Like, she... Like, there's evidence for both.
Well, she's not defending him in this scene, for
my
sure.
My biggest piece of evidence we'll get to, but mine's kind of small.
By the end, she's mad at him and is not seen defending him. So that...
I don't know, like, she does... I think she's, like, okay, here's my thing. Right before she, like, bows down to, like, pray for Kuvira, she looks to the side at both of them and realizes that neither of them are going to get them out of there or get her out of there.
Yeah.
Because they're stupid, and she's like, crap, I have to take charge, you know, because I'm the one with the brain.
Okay, we'll talk about that.
So there could be less having to do with, like, following Varric or really being mad at Varric and just, like, now believing in herself, where, like, I am the smartest person here, and I need to take charge.
Okay, let's hold off for that for a minute.
We're there.
Because we'll get to that scene. Well, we could talk now, but, we'll go in order.
Talk now about it, and then we can just...
Because the Asami discussion is completely different. Okay. So I'm going to skip the last Asami scene for now, because that's a deep discussion we have to get into. And Varric and company are brought before Kuvira. Bolin and Julie will be sent to camps. Varric is... I thought this was how it worked the first time, is that Varric was staying, and Bolin and Julie are being sent to camps. But I think what she's saying is, take all three on the next train out, right?
Yes.
She says all three. So Varric is going away, but is just going to a lab to work. The other two are going to camps. Under heavily armed guards.
And she says there's a scale of camps. That means there's, like, worse camps than
others. Well, she said there's one of the worst camps, Julie prostrates herself, says Mel, to Kuvira and claims she made a mistake in her loyalty to Varric. Talks a lot, says Mel. Compared to you, Varric's a fool. Mel says cult of personality, which Kuvira gives her another chance. And then Julie says, guards do the thing. Or that. Did she say that thing or the thing?
Guards do the thing.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Sure? Okay, and then Varric's like, not the thing. No. It was great, yeah.
In general, I'm not a fan of that storytelling device where, like, someone who was a prisoner but is now on the good side is now ordering the guards.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, right?
I'm going to tell my guards what to do. Don't really tell
them. I thought it was stupid that she said that, but I appreciated it because it says all the time at her.
It had to happen, she could say that line.
I understand what's good.
But yeah, no, I agree. I see that happen. I've seen that happen before as a device. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Why is the person who is doing that giving orders now? Okay, so this scene. There's a lot of angles to talk about here. One is just how much Julie talks, and we're going to give shout-outs to Stephanie Hsieh, Julie's voice actress, who has done a lot of anime dubs. Like, Allie would be freaking out if she looked at those. just, like, seemingly every single anime dub in existence she has been a voice on. I think she does a really good job with the scene, and in general, and... She hasn't had much to say with Julie before, but now she's, like, credited somewhat highly in the credits and stuff like that. Lots of angles to talk about here. One is whether she obviously is sincere, is doing this to try to escape or try to, or actually, like, get out of, or is pissed at Varric and get out of this. Two is how, even if she is faking, how sincere her words are. Like, the most interesting thing to me is...
it's kind of like Iki, like that scene with Iki.
Yeah, except the difference, as I pointed out last episode, I don't think Iki is manipulating the guards at all intentionally.
I wish I was on that one, because I totally think she was manipulating him. That cute.
I think I defended that pretty well in chat when we were discussing that, and on the podcast, but that's not the point here. Either way, Julie here, if she is trying to... if she is still loyal to Varric, this is a complete manipulation of everyone around her on purpose. And even if she is, though, she says that she always stayed with Varric because she thought he was, like, the greatest mind in the world, but now she sees that she's not, you are. So this is kind of interesting, because this is just a super realistic motivation for her to take here. Like, why is she staying with this idiot, right? Oh, it's because he's a great mind, and she wants to attach herself to that, and it makes sense, and it's kind of a plotline that's been used before. And I feel like even if she See, I think ultimately I would say, I've been trying to argue for the whole she's sincere, but I think ultimately she's still faking it and is going to go with Varric.
Well, like, what will it accomplish if she actually issues being sincere and we go the route where we think, you know, Kavira's going to get defeated, you know, all that. Like, what would it accomplish? Like, her being the brain and that's like the only way for it to be really impressive is for her to, like, be the brain and just free everyone, just completely trick Kavira, who is, she's been presented as the most clever, orchestrator in the season. Like, no one's been able to outwit Kavira.
She could take up some high position in Kuvira's army or something like that and takes over the Bolan role once Bolan escapes again. So I could see some function in the plot if she just legitimately goes with Kavira.
I meant, ultimately, like, if Kavira, you know, if Kavira's defeated and, like, based on that, like, what will that accomplish? Does that make sense? Like, ultimately.
Well, I could think of a real sexist route they would go in, which is, oh, you got your comeuppance, Julie. You shouldn't have abandoned Varric at all. I don't think that's where they're going. Like, so I do think that it's interesting that that would be the sexist group, but her kind of staying loyal to Varric is also a little bit sexist. Like, I don't know.
All right, I'm back.
Okay. I don't know. What are thoughts on this, and what do you think about Julie's motivations here?
Do I have to have an opinion?
Do you feel strongly either way? What did you think of the scene?
Not really. I mean, I just want to wait it out and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. That's fair. It is. It's ambiguous.
I don't really feel too much of an attachment to this plot anyway.
Yeah, I think I do because of how much Julie breaks out as like a character. I also think Varric's one of the more interesting characters on the show consistently. Yep.
True.
I like that they're keeping up there's the podcast mascot Brit's dog. Yes. I like that they're keeping up the portrayal of Varric as like this sympathetic character, but he's still kind of a jerk underneath it all. Even though he's not necessarily flat out evil in this episode, he realizes that this weapon shouldn't be given to Kavira. He's still a jerk to Julie. Just consistently. It's an interesting portrayal.
We can all be jerks.
Yeah, but Varric especially, you know. I just don't think he's ever portrayed as a good person. I don't know. What's we're gonna go around the horn here and vote on whether Julie is gonna go with Kavira or Varric. Okay. Let's start with the Delaney.
So you mean like ultimately in
ultimately game. in the show, which will probably happen next episode.
She's tricking Kavira. I think like she's gonna go back to Varric because I do think regardless of whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, I think she has like legitimately romantic feelings for him, if not just simple admiration.
Right. So let's discuss that actually, the romantic feelings part. So there's maybe two reasons for her to actually care about staying with Varric this entire time, despite the fact that Varric insults him all the time, other than the fact that it's like a stable job, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
One is she has some sort of personal connection to him. Like even if it's not romantic feelings, she feels very deep personal feelings towards him. Two is that she is trying to attach herself to a great mind, like she says in the scene.
She could just admire him.
And just, like, admire him a lot.
Like, running theory for, like, the past, like, couple of seasons that Varric was just kind of, like, not actually, just kind of a figurehead and that she was actually the mind. Genius behind everything.
Yeah.
They were both aware that he was just kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think that's legitimate there.
Like, he was a front.
I was half expecting Varric to go, but I need Julie to like he couldn't run the lab on his own. Like I was half expecting that because he's always like, I can't do anything without Julie. Like he names everything after her and like he needs her for everything.
Yeah.
So I was really shocked that that wasn't like a thing, like that he didn't say that when they were all being sent off.
Britt, what do you think Julie's doing?
I think Julie is doing the best to save her own butt. But I do think she cares about Varric, but at the very least, she's at least mad at him. You know, I think she's genuinely angry.
Okay, genuinely angry, I think that's...
But she may not be, like, ready to throw herself at the feet of Kuvira.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Her boss.
Somewhere in the middle? Okay, well, Jeff,
somewhere
what do you think?
Somewhere in the middle.
I am on the side of she's putting herself in a position to betray Kuvira later on.
Same.
Like, oh, I got this awesome, believable story,
yeah.
So let's use it.
And do you think the story is genuine?
I think she probably does feel that.
Okay.
I
don't,
yeah.
Sam. Pick a
side. I don't want to pick a side. I feel like maybe she's like faking it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah. I think it's more I think it's much less clear than some people think.
I have no opinion until it happens.
Yeah.
Until we find it.
I mean, I think, see, I think she's mostly faking this, but is still legitimately angry at Varric and will see some sort of ramifications once she saves him. Like Britt said. The reason I think that she's faking it is because I think next episode is half of the plot is Julie breaks Bolin and Varric like kind of out or whatever. You know, like I think that just has to happen for the plot to move along. So I think that's just what's gonna happen next episode, you know. Either way, I just really liked Julie's portrayal in this. I hope
Power and Bopal have like a girl power episode. Like I was hoping for the season one finale, and they both break their man out of jail, and they're like, "Yeah, you need to get your like life together because this is not working."
How about Julie rescues Varric and Bolin and drops Bolin off with Opal, and then they're both fed up with Bolin and Varric being dumb, so they get together themselves.
Yes, that's fine with me.
You see, that would be okay.
I don't think it'll be next episode though. I don't
Julie,
think...
Julie and Opal, what's that ship?
Is that legal? Jopal. It's Jopal.
I think that's... Opal's 20 now, yeah.
I don't think that Julie, like, whatever we're going to find out about like, which side she's on, I don't think it'll be clear. Like, I feel like I got a reply on something about she's playing the longest long game. Like, I do think there's a chance that she... Like, this could be longer than what we think. Like, it might not become clear until, like, for a while.
Mm-hmm. She seems like somebody have, like, a long planet action. Yeah. Maybe she wants to fill the power void. Maybe Julie wants to be in power.
This is going to happen. Julie will be the leader. That is my theory claim.
Okay,
yes.
Great. Good theory. We'll see if that pans out.
I mean,
okay.
Someone's going to have to take over that power vacuum, and, like, that's how it ends. And then, like, it's just forever, and it's, like, cyclical.
Okay, so now we're going to shift gears. I know we skipped the order on the outline, but we're going to talk about in the episode. But I want to talk about the last Asami scene now, and we can really get into Asami and her motivations because we get the full extent of it now. So Asami goes to see her father again. She says she wanted her words to hurt her father so he'd know how he hurt her. And he apologizes. She says she's not angry but sad, decides to try to forgive. She doesn't think she can forgive him, but she can try, and they play by show. So this is nicely set up in the stakeout last season when Asami says, "I'll destroy you. I was taught by a diabolical genius, my father," when playing play show with Bolin.
I'll destroy you.
Okay, so I want to read a really poignant comments from Mel on this. That are very important, I feel like. Mel says, "On the topic of the B-plot, I can say that I think Asami's reaction to her father is very realistic and very natural. I'm not sure if there's any debate on this, but if it comes up in the podcast, you can share that I have had to deal with an alcoholic and honestly emotionally abusive father. And as much as I've tried to ignore him and just push him out of my life, it's not hard to try to forgive him because... there was a point and time in my life that he was my father and not a cruel person, and that's who I remember, so I feel Asami." The line about how Asami is not angry at her father but sad hit me really hard because it's the exact feeling I've had for a very long time, and it's actually pretty nice to see something like this played out truthfully. This might be my favorite arc plot line so far in Korra, assuming it keeps up as it has. So from a personal standpoint, I do really like this plot and resonate strongly with it. And apparently I continue to be Asami, says Mel, which is true. I just didn't like the placement of the plot, she says.
Everybody can relate to Korra this... Well, it's not character, but the show, Korra this season.
Yeah, I do like how they're bringing up stuff in the show that is connecting with people on the podcast, like, specifically. I like that. I think we should all take Mel's statements here to heart. I think a natural reaction you might see to this plotline is, wow, why is Asami going to see him? Hiroshi literally tried to kill her in book one. And even though that's an extreme of what happens in real life, although maybe not, some people still feel a connection to their fathers because it's their fathers or parents, and it's and even if they don't treat them well, they still want to have them in their lives, and they're just sad about it and not necessarily like super angry. And I also feel like it really works for Asami too because of how and it works kind of now because of how alone she is recently without anyone from Team Avatar.
They talked about her dependence.
Yeah, this is another this dependence on other people, but
this is her dad, and like her mom passed away when she was really young. I mean, this is all she has left.
Yeah, and there's no Korra in her life the past 3 years too. So it's almost even surprising it's taken her this long to go see him, like just having no one there. I don't know, thoughts on, with regardless of the placement of it in the plot, these scenes specifically with Asami.
Thumbs up.
Yes. Like, I think they're important for her development.
Yeah, they are important for her development. I'm glad they happened. But again, like what Mel was saying about placement in the plot, I'm not sure about that either. I'm not sure about having it. I felt like it was almost a C plot.
Like that's we what had, I thought it was a C plot.
It was the C plot, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's hard to tell because A and B were kind of the same.
Yeah. Because well, I mean, A and B converge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of wonder where it's going to go, if it's going to go anywhere.
Seems like they're not done with it.
Yeah.
I don't think this plot belonged in this episode. I do like that we had this. I think it was well done. Maybe I think it's good that Asami has the spotline. That being said,
good to see Asami.
Yeah.
This episode is already very fast, and we already don't understand a lot of what happened in the NB plots until further watches. And I don't think Asami belongs in this episode. I guess.
I really don't.
I think this would work either last episode or the episode before it.
Yeah, it would have been a lot of depressing stuff, but yeah.
Yes, but still, yeah. I think it would work better.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think actually specifically maybe in the coronation, Mako and Wu plotline.
No, don't insult Zuko.
It was very incongruous. I know, right?
I really wasn't like I'm usually the one who hates the pacing. I wasn't really bothered by the pacing this episode, and like I actually really liked that Asami, like I do think it would there's better placement for it, but I really liked the placement of like the Asami scenes. Like I think
there's a distinction between pacing and content of various scenes. Like I don't think content is necessarily.
Well, you talked about it being like kind of rushed. Like it was hard to like follow.
I think it was hard to follow. I don't know if it, like I think they happen fast. I think the pacing of switching between scenes was fine. Like that's it was like I think that's different from some other things. You know.
Yeah.
It could be possible this was meant to be in a different episode originally, and it just, like, didn't fit, so this is where they stuck it.
I feel like it ties in with Batar, which, obviously, that was like, this is a connection I made. It's not necessarily something you're supposed to make from watching the TV. Like, we have this a lot of, like, Kuvira, it's not just Batar. Kuvira and Batar are confronting their past. They're returning to Jafu. Korra is confronting, like, she is returning to being the Avatar. So this is a lot of confronting the past and returning to full strength, and this is what Asami has to do to recover from everything that's happened. From like she's still been struggling with this from book one. That look, I don't know if like I'm assuming he's been sending letters since book one. So I think this was a episode where a lot of things just converged from other seasons, and I think I enjoyed it. It might not necessarily have been like as clear or necessarily executed as like. I mean, I thought like I've really thought about it because I really liked it. That they're all confronting their past, and you know, obviously the parent part. Sue was like a parent to Kuvira, and Batar is talking to his parents. So I just thought it all related, and I enjoyed it.
I think if they focused more on Batar, it might be.
Yeah, but I hate Batar, so I kind of don't want to focus on Batar. But that's cool.
I feel like
the focus on Kuvira is a bit more like. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, she's portrayed as being a child of the Metal Clan family.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely.
Well, we are told that this episode. Yeah. Any other thoughts?
I kind of feel like that would be more of like an English class sort of like find the connections between the things.
I agree with that. Like finding things, themes in the book that I don't necessarily see when I read it. That's I feel
a
like
discussion
that.
Question. Yeah.
But I don't know. Everyone's going to find
something
find
you write
an
APP.
To connect to. Any other thoughts on the Asami plot?
I liked it on its own. Maybe not with the rest of the episode, but it was needed. It was feelsy, and why are they playing Pesho at the end? I don't know, but they're playing Pesho.
I like that.
I did like them playing Pesho.
We didn't ask from Toon Gal about where they're going with this. Toon Gal says, I like that they gave Asami something on the most recent episode, but it felt a little out of place. Will Hiroshi end up playing a bigger role, or is this foreshadowing for something else?
It could be. Maybe he's going to make, like, an anti-super weapon so they can take down Kuvira.
Yeah, Everyone just goes to prison. They're talking to Hiroshi and they're like, help us.
Tunga says, one of my theories is that Kuvira will ultimately be a redeemable villain, so is this hinting at Sue possibly forgiving her and Batar Jr. in the end? So, like, I think there's a lot of, so that's an interesting thing that I don't think a lot of people are thinking of. Like, this maybe, a lot of people are like, okay, Hiroshi, he designed the mecha tanks, he's gonna help with the laser or something like that. But it could just be, like, this forgiveness theme is gonna apply. This is, like, not foreshadowing anything with Hiroshi himself, just a forgiving, other people in that Kuvira
Avatar. Yeah, I agree.
Might be forgive themselves. I think it's maybe hard not to see mecha tanks in this episode and Hiroshi at the same time and not connect them.
Yeah.
Those are his invention.
So I don't know how they would play. I don't know how he'd come into play.
I don't think
there,
we have enough information for that.
It's probably hard to know. Do I have any other?
I don't think we do.
Any other asks on this? We'll get to it later. Okay. Last thing that happens in the episode is Korra wants to talk to Sue, so she talks to Batar, but Sue is sneaking into Kavira's camp to put an end to all this.
He really is.
Like, he's so useless.
He's the designer.
Batar Jr.
Both of them. I meant both of them, but I meant particularly Batar Sr.
He's the architect.
Oh no, I couldn't, like, dude.
So who's sneaking in with Sue?
It's going to be the
twins.
Yeah, it's Wing and Wei.
Yeah, the children.
Because we get that scene from the trailer where they're, like, in some sort of metal thing.
We do?
Yeah.
And then he looks down all sad. Oh god.
Yeah, so I was thinking, like, that. Well, it wouldn't be a mech. I thought it was going to be a mech, but if they're using that to get into the camp, they wouldn't do that because those are noisy. But they could be, like, Kuvira's version of stalks. Like, oh, we've captured you.
That's what I think. I think it's, like...
And now we're going to, like, string you up and make you watch while we burn your city or something.
Oh, joy.
Secret assassin.
Yeah.
Yes. I can't believe Sue grabbed her children. Like, we're going to go kill her.
Yeah.
Like, really?
I mean, they're adults.
Like, come on,
children.
Kids, let's go kill your adopted sister.
It's totally a Beifong thing to do, but...
Because it's Nickelodeon, they're probably going to be like, we're going to corner you and make you say you're going to go away, and then...
Well, I don't know. Well, okay, we say that, but... You
know, but last season.
Died.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they actually were like...
Yeah, they're going to try to kill her.
Well, they keep saying, like...
They don't really say...
Go into the Avatar state and intern, like...
Yeah, they don't really say kill in terms of killing people. They say
they don't say kill, but they might say, like, annihilate or take out.
Yeah. But they're totally killing.
Yeah, after, like, they killed the Earth Queen last season, I'm not taking any chances. They're going to try to kill her.
I mean, it's online, too. So
I don't think... The show isn't innocent anymore.
What's the plot? Is this the main plot of next episode? Is it Sue going into to
assassinate?
Find
Sue? Yeah, probably. I think that's.
But if she ends up killing her son in an accident, I'm gonna cry.
No, don't talk about that. Shh.
Shh.
Okay.
What? Ooh, is Batar being set up to be Batar Jr. being set up to be killed? Interesting.
Very useless.
Even though I don't like Batar, I'd feel bad for Sue.
Oh, maybe this is what, because Kavira's kind of rational here, maybe this is what spirals Kavira out of control, them killing Batar accidentally.
Maybe she did love him, she's just
No, I get the impression she kind of does, you know, like...
Yeah.
I mean, do they
Who's
cuddle at night?
Who's
going
to open doors for me now?
Yeah, for real, exactly. Sam gets it.
Obviously they cuddle.
That they don't, like...
Like, why can't
do anything coupley at all? Like,
yeah, like, can they be cute for like a little bit?
They're just cute
Does she
and
have
private.
An engagement ring on underneath those gloves? I need to know this.
Okay,
yeah, that's fair.
Okay, let's grade the episode, and so let's give you the scale here. 10 is the best episode of television you've ever seen. 5 is an average episode of television, and we're going to start with Jeff because he has to leave soon. Jeff, who might be on mute right now. Quite possibly.
Sorry.
Yes.
Okay. I was giving... Okay. 6.8.5 is what I would get.
6.8.5. What?
Yeah.
6.8.5.
Okay. Why a 6.8?
That's 7.3, depending on your interpretation. But
that's pretty... I think that seems somewhat lower for you than normal. What would you say?
Yeah. It's just... I don't know. It wasn't... There weren't very many, like, standout amazing parts. Just the combat sequence with the mechs was, like, the only really... That combat mechs and the vine, those are the only two parts that really interested me about this episode.
Yeah, so. I actually really agree with the no standout scenes thing. I guess I'll talk about it later. Yeah, any other thoughts?
No, that's about it.
Let's go to Brits, out of 10.
I would give it a 6.5. Average, above average episode, good episode, no standout scenes, it was funny in some parts. It was a plot along, it was a solid episode, you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing particularly, like, horribly wrong with it, or even just plain wrong with it. It was a good episode.
Delaney.
It's not my favorite.
I have a feeling mine's going to be the highest, and actually, like, I kind of want to give it an 8. I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was really solid and good, and I enjoyed it. Standout scenes I can understand. I just really liked this episode, and it hit on a lot of good points, and it set up a lot. And it not even just set up, because we've discussed how set up episodes aren't necessarily the best, but this episode's great, and I really enjoyed it. So, 8.
Sam.
I liked this episode better before we discussed it. I'm going to give it a 6. Because, you know, it was average, but then, you know, Sami was there, so she makes that one point happen.
That there one point happen.
Oh. Makes sense.
I'm going to give it an 8, along with Delaney.
Really?
Yeah, so this is the same grade I've given the past two episodes, and I think upon further reflection, it's basically the same quality as the past two episodes. On one hand, there's nothing overtly wrong with it. Like I thought the previous two episodes had something very clearly wrong. Episode 3, the core plotline was bad. Episode 4, a lot of the moments with the kids. Okay, goodbye to Jeff. Thanks for being on. There's just a lot of the small things in episode 4 and maybe didn't come together with the kids, and the blatant stuff with Toph saying things that they're saying the theme of the show last episode. This episode doesn't really have that. There's some things which I've said I don't necessarily love, like Kavir's character going all over the place, and I don't know what else I talked about. Something. Oh, and the Sami plotline just being shoehorned in. There you go. But I think it was more consistent. I don't think anything really stood out to me. Like, there was no Toph and Korra scene with connecting everything and you need your support group. Like, there's no scene that emotionally resonated to me like that. So I would say it's more consistent. I like all the Varric and Spirit Vine stuff, and Julie breaking out was great. So I just think the last two episodes have been on a fairly consistently very good but not standout pace. Comparing it to book 3, episode 5 of book 3 was arguably the best episode of the season, although I would not say so. It is up there. And this was not, even in that league, so it's a little worrisome. And I'm skeptical next episode will be in the same realm as episode 5 of last season, so we'll see. I don't know, what are you guys' thoughts on where book 4 is heading?
Well, go ahead.
I think the last few episodes are going to be the real, like, heavy hitters, so they're trying to get as much plot as they can in these next couple of episodes. Plus, I'm expecting there to be a big plot shift. Usually, it's supposed to happen in this episode or the next episode. And it didn't happen really in this episode, so it's either going to happen in next episode or it's not going to happen at all.
Well, I think
you know what I mean by a giant plot.
I think we kind of know what's going to happen in the next two, right? Like, we don't know who's going to win in Zafu, but we know they're going to Republic City later. And
yeah,
so I'm not sure where the plot shift would happen, honestly.
Yeah.
I think it would be interesting if Kuvira lost. Like,
yeah.
We all are in the mindset that she's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
But what if she loses? Like, what would happen? So that makes me feel
it's
not going to turn out like we think it is. Or if she wins, it's not going to happen like we think it's going to happen. Or if she loses, it's not going to happen like we think it would happen. You know what I mean? Like, there's going to be some weird third element that's going to be brought out.
Yeah, I honestly don't really know what's going on next episode. We'll see. I mean, I speculate on the two plot, A and B, but we'll see.
On book 4 as a whole, like, I feel like, I mean, we're playing, I'm with you, Dylan, like, I really don't really know what's going to happen, but we're playing a long game. Like, they're doing a lot of setup, which is why, you know, you're talking about how you think this episode's weaker than book 3. Well, book 3's plot, like, I mean, we thought it was going to be a bit different, and it was ideology and then all of that. This is, I mean, we're setting up for war. It's what this is set. I'm curious as to if it's actually going to continue to just be all out war, or, like, we're just setting up for huge. And I hope there's a third element that comes in, because I can't see I can't see myself being satisfied with a book four that's all war, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I feel you. Like, I'm currently kind of skeptical we'll get another truly great episode this season, which I know is not true. Like, they've been consistent enough with truly great episodes, like, spacing out-wise. Like, we had three pretty evenly spaced out last season, and we had one in the beginning of the season. So, like, it seems like based on the pattern, we'll get to one other incredible one. But I just don't see it based on these past three, you know? Like, they've been very good, and they've been interesting, but it's just not anywhere close to the standout ones.
I don't have high hopes.
I mean, I don't. It's still the end of Korra. Like, it's still going to be exciting no matter what.
The end of Korra, yeah, but I don't know. In accordance to my tastes, I just don't like this plot. It's so boring.
Kuvira is a great
world
team.
Domination is so boring.
Yeah,
guys.
It is.
Like,
it
I'm
is
waiting for, like, I want, like,
ground, yeah.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that to be something. That's what I'm displeased with. And I love Kuvira as a character. This can't be it. I don't want Book 4 Korra to be world dominated. I don't want it to be Ozai.
Let's bring the spirits.
Like, I don't think it's going to happen. That's why I keep telling you there's going to be some other element. It's going to be a
plot.
Well,
I hope so. I'm just looking that way right now.
The worry is that the other element is just this spirit.
Like, I'm just
ray.
Concerned.
Like, the spirit. Like, that. Like, a spirit beam is not going to make to shake things up enough. And I'm sure there will be another
city
element.
Like,
we know nothing about it, so I'm sure there will be other stuff. Anyway.
I also don't want to go back to Republic City. I want everyone to be united, but I'm like, oh, I don't want to go back to Republic City.
I want Mako to, like, go away. I'd like not have Mako today.
Well, Mako was not in the episode, so.
Well, Mako just needs to go away in general.
I mean, I think Mako's been portrayed somewhat sympathetically this season.
Yeah. Oh, I just don't care about Mako.
It's just because I ship Wuko, but.
Yeah, I mean, it might just be the Wuko, but we'll see.
It's just the Wuko.
This time for Mel's thinks. We've heard some of Mel's thinks so far. Mel says, like this episode better than last week. However, the B-plot was very weak and brought the episode down for me. I love Asami, but her scenes just slowed the action and had absolutely no bearing on anything going on in the episode or on the current affairs this season. It's possible and probable. This came up at some point because they're setting up a Hiroshi to help them deal with the Mecha Tank / Spirit Vine Tech situation and maybe redeemed. Then I read her personal stuff on Asami. I liked the building of Sue and Kuvira's relationship. Thought it would have been nice to have seen that last season instead of hearing about it now. However, it still works. I like their dynamic, but the surrogate mother-daughter tension would hit hard if we saw it in action before now. I agree, Mel.
Yes, yeah, I definitely agree.
Mel continues, not sure how I feel about Bolin. I like that his character is getting one of the bigger arcs this season, but they still keep him almost completely humorous, which got a bit annoying, especially in the scene where he initially went to speak with Sue. However, at this point, I probably just have to accept this as his character at this point, which sucks.
I didn't see him as humorous. I thought it was, like, more of a optimism that just was kind of awkward. I didn't really
it's
see
just,
it.
Like a blind optimism. Like, I agree.
Yeah.
It's just his, like demeanor.
Just
I don't know.
Who he is, yeah. It's like how I'm always funny.
You are always funny.
Yes.
Continuing with Mel's thing. Julie is 500% faking it, which is actually impressive considering she said three words before now and is therefore able to fool Kuvira. Props to you, Julie, for becoming a character in the last season. Mel says, 7.7 out of 10. Good character moments. I like that this episode, along with others, pays more attention to characters that are not Korra. Loved Asami's plot, but I think it was misplaced in the episode and makes it feel thrown together instead of interwoven. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. He's the real MVP.
Let's read our friend Greg Serafan's thoughts on this episode. SensibleReason.com. I love Julie in the episode. I think this is probably a ploy to stay out of prison and stay with Varric, because as dedicated but detached as she seems, clearly she is at least somewhat in love with him. I definitely have to ship Varric and Julie. I think if any couple is together at the end of the series, it will be them, pronounces Greg. Do you guys agree with that? Are they the most likely canon couple in the entire show?
Yes, they gonna do the do.
No, I
gonna
think...
gonna do the thing!
I think Jinkai / Kainora is more likely.
They gonna do
that's
the
fair.
Thing!
That's fair. Jinkai's like, it's a
it's
thing.
It's like
right
90%,
now.
This is like 89%, right? Like,
well, they are too young to do
Jinkai.
The
not that thing! Okay. Just be together. Oh my goodness.
But see, Jinkai is canon. So Julie's more likely to be canon.
Okay. Continuing with Greg's email. I don't really buy Varric wanting to abandon the Vine Project after just one test. Even something that powerful, and even if he was starting to listen to his conscience, he seemed really excited about the possibilities of this tech, and you would think he would at least do a few more tests if he was having misgivings.
Yeah, we don't have time for that in the plot.
Yeah, it, it just had to. We just had to show it very fast. I do kind of buy him, like, seeing that he created a super weapon and backing off. Like, I don't think he's, like... Like, I think he's past that point where he was in book two, where he's creating weapons. So I guess I kind of buy that. But yeah, it would have been realistic if he eventually came to this conclusion rather than it happening fast. Yeah. Continuing with Greg's email, it seems strange that Batar Jr. would claim that it is not his, it is not his home anymore. It's only been 3 years, and as we learn in their flashback, his departure wasn't so contentious that he would want to forget his whole childhood and identity.
He's such a whiny brat.
Exactly. Batar just saw her.
Greg says, Bolin's actions seem in character, and I love it again that while he still has naivety, he is not a clown.
I agree with Greg.
It was less clowny. It was definitely
Agree with less clowny, but not necessarily...
I think he's less obviously comic relief, definitely, right now. So this is a good one. Greg says, the old Korra... there is no real character development since she removed the metal, and while fighting her own demon, she was willing to us to violence, hence fighting her own spirit. So what has changed other than her physical well-being to make her the new Korra? I'm afraid that even if Korra is not explicitly stated to be mentally recovered, that the storyline is going to be swallowed up and overshadowed by the resolution of the overall conflict in the world, especially since there are so few episodes left to resolve a lot of the storylines and questions. So, yeah.
I share that fear.
I'm very fearful of that, especially when it was not really addressed this
episode.
But
I hope that since she doesn't want to seem, like, I hope she's scared of the Avatar state.
Yeah, that being said, like, I think her portrayal of this episode was fine with where she should realistically be right now.
Yes.
Like, I think that was fine. She doesn't need to be having hallucinations still to, like,
she can have a break. Like, she deserves a break. She can be cool right now. Like,
so what do you guys think about Greg says he doesn't buy that the new Korra. She's still fighting the spirit even when she's recovering.
I have a feeling that she's fighting the spirit, but it's less direct. Like, she's not having hallucinations, but that doesn't mean she's still not fighting it internally. She's just in more control. She has taken some steps towards recovery. She's in a better place than she was before, but she's not well. Does that make sense?
Fighting the spirit in terms of physically, like, she's physically trying to fight the spirit when she's recovering. Like, now she seems to not want to use any violence at all, right?
She's, like, emotionally has a blockage up or something.
I buy it from a perspective of...
chakra has been blocked.
No chakras, please. Don't. Please, no. I buy it from a perspective of fearing all of this past stuff. Like, I think it's very in character that she wouldn't want to take the violent route and be threatened again, like how she was at the end of the book three finale, and not want to know what the Avatar state's going to do to her, right? Like, I don't know. I buy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I understand where Greg's coming from. I think it's a good point that she was physically using violence when mentally recovering, right? So now she's like, no violence. I think it's a good point.
Yeah.
And his last point, was not impressed by this episode overall. I only watched it once and watched others three times for getting feedback, but I don't mind episodes with minimal action and little in-universe travel. This one didn't do much for me. I felt the pace was very slow at times, and the parts that were interesting to me, like the flashback and Bolin's escape, were too short, and is not bad per se, but it was generally unsatisfying. Perhaps it will be much better than the context of the rest of the season, but as a standalone, it was only okay. I think a lot of people are saying they don't like it as a standalone episode.
I'm fine with it.
Like,
yeah, I don't like it.
I'm fine with it as a standalone. Like, yeah. I don't know. Don't expect things to be two-parters. Like, that's not how the show really works. Like, I know that there were a few kind of two-parters last season, but they were separate episodes. In terms of the two Zafu episodes, the two Passing Say episodes at the beginning of the season, like, those were separate episodes each time.
This feels like it should be, like, labeled as a two-parter, though.
That being said, there are plot threads, like, in terms of, like, that, like, are literally continuing into
it
the next one.
It directly runs into the other one.
Yeah, so I guess it just depends how it's presented, so it might mm-hmm. just be, like, a kind of a two-parter, pseudo-two-parter. Okay, I have a voicemail we got during the podcast. I haven't had time to screen it yet, so I'm gonna play it and see what happens. Who knows what's on this? Well, let's go.
It's just Allie screaming.
Surprise bag.
Hi, podcast. This is Tato. I just have to say I really like the Asami subplot. I'm not sure what's going to happen with Shuli. I'm hoping that she betrays Kuvira later, because I really despise Kuvira, and I just want her to suffer. But too bad Bolin couldn't, you know, lava bend Batar, you know, to death, but, you know, it happens. Alright. let me know what you think about that Shuli thing. Thank you.
Oh.
Couldn't lava bend Zipatar to that it happens?
What? I don't know. I was kind of frustrated that he didn't lava bend sooner.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I was too.
That was so violent. Why do you despise Kuvira, Tato? Like,
yeah, that's why I was like, Kuvira's great. The best.
Come on. No, what did he say about Julie that he wanted us to comment on?
About like her betraying Kuvira. Like he wants her to betray Kuvira.
Yeah, yeah, we talked about that. Yeah, definitely. We think that's probably gonna happen. Also, this week got a voicemail from
Danny
from Brazil. But it was kind of thrown out of date from this episode. He had a really interesting vine there involving the spirit vines, involving how it was like they somehow like connected the world, like kind of Toph in the Swamp, something relating to that. But it doesn't seem like that's where they're going with it. We'll see, though. It's kind of interesting, I guess. Yeah. Any other thoughts before we wrap things up on the episode or otherwise?
It was an episode.
It was an episode. It happened.
It did happen.
This is literally Star Wars, book four Star Wars.
Oh, well, it does seem like Star Wars.
Because Kuvira is Darth Vader.
True. Who is Emperor Palpatine, though? There's somebody above Kuvira.
Yeah.
It's secretly...
It's either
Julie or Zahir. One of those two.
It's definitely Julie.
Anyway, I've been your main host, Dylan. Co-hosts have been Britt, Delaney, Sam, and Jeff. Technical Director, AJ, Kevin, Jeff. Musical credits to the Yoshida Brothers, Jeremy Zuckerman, and Luke Shirp. Logan Banner by Kevin. Dong Fang is owned by Jake. Special contributor to the podcast, Gareth. Contributors, Sierra, Nick, Devin, and Lexi, Colin, Gretchen, Britt, Nathan, Jamie.
I haven't been here for any of these the last couple, so let's see. We got G Millionaire, Sierra Mist, Nick at Night, Rudy and Tabuti, Coin, Fetchin, Opal, Iroh, and J Nora.
J Nora, as nickname requested by himself, if that's allowed, but we're allowing it.
J Nora, whoever you
Jamie.
Are. Jamie.
J Nora. Okay. It's a pretty good one, though.
Only because
we'll allow it.
We'll allow it. It's pretty
good. It's not related to money. But that's fine.
That's fine.
Neither are most of these.
You can, if you enjoyed today's podcast, you can donate by going to dongbufeng.net/podcast and click donate at the top. Also on the podcast page, dongbufeng.net/podcast, you can click podcast bios to get our bios and awesome artwork by Teresa. You can email me at dylan@dongbufeng.net. Our Tumblr is dongbufeng.tumblr.com. Our Twitter is @dongbufeng. The Dongbufeng forums, where you can give me comments on this episode, are dongbufeng.net/forums. Or you can send me an ask on Tumblr at dylanftsw.tumblr.com. Let me know what you thought of the podcast, what you think of what we said, any feedback. You could also review us on iTunes. Bridge search From the Spirit World or Quora on iTunes. We are the first Quora podcast to pop up after the weird Nick feed it's not really active anymore. You can follow me, you can follow these guys, they're linked from the Dongbufeng Tumblr post, and you can Tumblr. Send us voicemail. A great length for the voicemail is what Tato had at 30 seconds. Much more likely to play yours on the podcast if it's around 30 seconds. And you can send us the DF Tumblr or my Tumblr before around 2 p.m. or so on Fridays to get your thoughts on the next podcast. Next episode is ? We will learn the name and they'll see the first 90 seconds or so tonight. You can see it first on dongbufeng.tumblr.com. If you're listening to this past the 31st of October, you can find this information on dongbufeng.tumblr.com.
I'm gonna be so hungover in the morning. I'm just gonna go to Dongbufeng. Be like, oh, I needed to see the clip.
That's a recreation of tomorrow's Sam movement. Any guesses on the title of tomorrow's episode?
Enemy in the gates.
Enemy in the gates.
Enemy in the city.
The siege.
I'm gonna make a post of like really dumb siege episode names.
The siege of Zhao Fu, the battle of Zhao Fu, the sneak attack, the assassination, the Julie betrayal, the mecha tanks.
The thing.
Yeah, there you go.
Not the thing that certain
characters are definitely not doing because they're too young.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah. Like, maybe Korra and Asami.
That mean, maybe that mean. What did I want to say? Oh, we never commented on why Enemy at the Gates is such a bad title. I really dislike. I actually have a legitimate reason. I really dislike the Stedo for labeling Kuvira as enemy. Like, yeah. Let's not do that. Let's like show that instead of labeling her
also,
as enemy.
It's a phrase. I don't like titling things.
Also, it's like a saying, and there's also no gates in Zhaofu. There's
that'd be okay. But
there's like, metal lotus enemy at the metal lotus things.
Enemy,
yeah.
Enemy at the lotus.
Yeah, there you go. Not like, there's
anything,
no gates.
But enemy at the gates.
It's pretty bad. But it did not start with the. So props
yeah,
for that.
Was,
there you go.
The enemy at the gates.
I wanted to provide examples for the Avatar episodes where I start with the, and I went through episodes 1 to 8 of season 3, and only Sokka's Master does not start with the. All the rest of them, one to eight of season 3.
Yeah,
all
Sokka's
start with
the Master.
Good episode to rewatch tonight is the Puppet Master, I would say, the only Avatar
yeah,
Halloween episode.
Did they, like, air that around?
It was, like, it was early November, yeah.
It was early November.
Didn't get their crap together enough to actually air it on Halloween, but it was around there.
I mean, they were airing on, like, Fridays.
Yeah, so, and actually, it's not only is it, like, the only Avatar theme episode, it's, like, clearly supposed to be a Halloween-y type episode, it's also legitimately one of the best episodes of Avatar, so
it's scary.
It's really good, so I might rewatch that tonight, so anyway.
Yeah, I have a party.
Yes, final thoughts, Delaney.
Well, this is just kind of related to Halloween, you know, in the spirit of Halloween. I tried to mention it, but I don't think, like, I was understood about the voices. Like, she kept saying, there's a voice in my head, and I kept singing This Is Halloween in my head from The Nightmare Before Christmas, like, because he said, like, his voice, and she's like, well, I'm the other voice in your head, you know how the song goes?
Yeah. I get what you're saying, yeah. There you go. You are understood now.
You're welcome, guys.
You're understood.
Halloween.
Anyway. Thanks for listening, guys. What are we going to end on?
Guards, do the thing.
Do the guards. Are we sure it's the thing instead of that thing? Are we sure?
Yeah.
Why would they say
that
thing? Have to do the thing.
I know it has to be, but, like, I don't know. I can.
What's another memorable line? What was the bad line from today? Was that the bad line?
No, it wasn't.
I agree.
What was the bad line
I've ever created?
Oh, Dylan, that's a media podcast.
I'm gonna play the Julie line now.
Okay, you do that.
Nurse, we have history.
I did everything you ever asked of me, and you never appreciated it. Guards, do that thing.
No,
that is it. That thing.
It's the. It's the way she talks. It's the.
It sounds like that. I'm telling you.
I heard that.
No, like I think
I'm on the fence.
Should we replay it again? It's that
good. Sounds like that. I think she's saying the. It's just the way she says it that sounds weird. Does that make sense? Like, you know how people, like, pronounce words strangely?
Yeah.
I think it's the.
Let's play it again. This is how we're going to end the podcast.
Just for fun, yeah.
Copyright
yeah.
infringement, copyright suits right. from Nick.
It's the, I think.
No, I think it's that.
Why would she say that? Like,
I don't know. This is a controversy. Wow. You're going to have to give us your thoughts on this. Anyway, we're going to end on one of guards do the or that thing, okay? Because not that terrible line, because that's bad. Anyway, Britt dropped out too, so.
You're the greatest
Brit
I ever created.
Yeah, you're.
Yeah,
that's
right. The tears.
Anyway, thanks.
I say to nobody.
Thanks, yeah. Okay, thanks. Well, yeah.
I'm not doing the thing.
None of the people on the podcast have kids. Okay, there you go. Anyway, I don't think I can keep that in the podcast. Like, who knows if that's true?
You can delete that.
We'll
started, like, guard language.
I didn't know what to say to that. Anyway. I'm gonna edit just that part out so you guys don't know what was said. So now you can guess. You can guess. It wasn't bad, it was just weird. It was just like I don't describe it.
It was just Sam being weird.
I feel like other people like Mel or Allie might have said that though, if they're wrong. So
yes.
I don't know.
Well, it's not true.
I don't know if it's true. Who knows? Anyway.
It's not true.
I don't think it's true either. Okay. Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. 1, 2, 3. Do that thing.
Do the thing.
Guards.
Yes, Julie.
Do the thing.
Guards.
Do the thing.
No! Not the thing.